receive back. She is not here. I see new faces, very familiar. Mrs. Nzuza, what are you doing here in my committee? Someone has to explain. What is Mrs. Nzuza doing in my committee? I want to know. I welcome all of you to this meeting of international relations to receive a presentation by the CFO. This meeting coincides with the medium-term budget vote, coincidentally so, and the CFO is here to make presentation to us on certain issues. We are hoping that CFO, your presentation, although it landed to our PCs very late and a 60-page, hoping that honorable members were able to skim and scan, because you can't read a 60-page document, not unless you are preparing for a thesis or exam. Then you can read that 60-page document. We expect also, as honorable members, to Mr. Luyanda from the Minister's Office, that probably today we will understand the role of the CFO in the department, what the role of the CFO in the department, circumstances that led to the recurring negative audit findings by the AG 2013-2014, which relate to the work of the finance branch in particular, and what advice did the department give towards the turnaround or turning around the situation. Also, what processes did the CFO put in place to ensure that his branch ratifies the challenges raised by the AG and so on. So I think those pointers are pointers that will empower us as the portfolio committee moving forward, because we believe that as human beings we must learn from each other as much as there will be a process of dribbling, because dribbling will always be there, especially when circumstances dictate that. But what is important is that when we leave here, we leave this room having been empowered, because ourselves, we are not CFOs. We are not accountants. That's not our field. Only Honorable Nkosi and Chetty, who are experts in finance, our expertise are not in that field. Some of us, they are located elsewhere. But that's the purpose of the meeting, hoping that we will cooperate during this meeting. There will be no high blood pressures going up, because I mean, I'm not in a mood to manage blood pressures, Honorable Bachmann. So I just hope that you brought your medication before I show you the medication is in your bags and so on, hoping that we'll have a fruitful and progressive and productive meeting for the next 3 hours. That's the maximum that we intend to keep the meeting. So, Luyanda, what is Mrs. Nzuza doing in my meeting? Morning meeting, I'm saying, call my younger cousins. Pendul.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. Apologies, Chair. Mrs. Nzuza basically is in the DM's office. Yes. So. Oh, sorry, UDM Potes. So time and again, she will be coming because She's assisting with DM. Yes.
And I was not told. It was kept as a surprise. What are you thinking? That you're going to hide forever. Welcome to our committee, young woman. Without wasting time, honorable members, let's allow the CFO to take us through the presentation. But before that, Lubabalo must present the apologies.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we have 5 apologies. The first one from the Minister. She's attending the United Security Council meeting in New York. The second one is from Honorable Borders. He's attending other meetings. The third one from Honorable Marsha Khodlamini. She's attending the South Africa China Binational Commission in China. And then the fourth one from Honorable Swartz, who's still booked off sick. The fifth one is from Honorable Mowela. He's attending the SADC-PF meeting in Gauteng. And the fifth and the sixth one is from Honorable Misho, is attending the Portfolio Committee on Police. However, he will join us later, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks. All the apologies are valuable, so we are accepting them. Thank you very much. You may proceed, CFO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. This is my first attempt to share the work that I do as a CFO to the committee. The presentation covers the matters that were highlighted as need clarity. Just to give a background, Honorable Chair, in terms of the areas that are of problematic, especially in the area that I oversee in terms of the responsibility as the CFO. The first area, Chair, one of the issues that the department has been receiving a qualification on areas on assets as well as the supply chain in terms of findings, which has to do with the procurement in missions, where missions have delegation of to approve for procurement on quotations. However, head office retained the delegation in the procurement of services above 500,000, so which is basically the tender processes. There's no special any exemption for the department to when they procure, so we follow what the FFA dictates in terms of that. So there's no any special arrangements that department has sourced in terms of that process. So the area that we want to start with, the one is the cash of the management of cash and cash equivalent. So this is the area that the department performs in servicing our missions abroad in terms of their day-to-day operations. The department transfer requests transfers from Reserve Bank, which now the department operates more than 300 bank accounts overseas, which move from the hard currency such as US dollar, euros, British pounds, Swiss francs, and Australian dollars, and local currency where the department operates. If we look at India, they will then be offering an account of Indian rupees. In China, they will have a renminbi, and which is basically the work that we do in terms of how we service that. So in the audit for 2018-19, Auditor General has then found that the department was not performing reconciliation on a regular basis. And this reconciliation in terms of the problem statement is that the current operating model of transferring funds between missions and head offices performed manually. So currently we don't have a separate treasury function in the department in managing these funds. So that is one of the area and we don't have an automated process in which we then need to then reconcile. So it means that the reconciliation had to be performed manually. So this was sufficient when the department was basically still using the cash accounting. Now, with the movement of cash accounting to modified cash, then the department was not able to change its way. So whatever money that was transferred, because we were recording cash and not necessarily transfer functions, remain as a function that is performed manually in terms of what was transferred to machines and how then we reconcile with the expenditure that was then incurred in a particular month. So that is where, and then we then look at these inadequate reconciliations as the cause, one of the root causes in finance is the capacity constraint within the cash and cash management unit. So when we say capacity constraint, one of the challenges that we then encounter based on the departmental policies that officials, irrespective of which field of discipline that you came into the department, you are then, after some time completing internal courses, you are then eligible to go for posting. So in that process, it then creates a vacuum, because people who were recruited to perform a particular task, they are now posted to other area. And now in that system, you then have a recurring cycle in terms of people who were in the missions, who had no formal accounting experience, will then return to head office. When they return, because of the levels that they occupied, which is level 6, 7, 8, 9, they will then be placed in the finance environment, which then compromise on the skill set, and that will create a problem in terms of bookkeeping, so that the skills that one learned at school, they're not having those skills in terms of that process. Then it creates a gap. And in that, we also then have a challenge in terms of segregation of duties, in terms of the accounting profession. It works based on segregation of duties that you can't finish one transaction alone. So you need to then have quality review. We have different levels of reviewers in terms of that. So then in terms of this, we then, when we post, when people go to training, in the past when we had capacity, we then able to go out and recruit for new skills. Because we've got a training for administration, which is basically 12 months. So it means that if an accountant has been appointed, after whatever 2 years, 3 years, they will qualify to go for training. So then they will leave a vacancy. So now in the past, those were managing by creating a pool in terms of codes of training, trainers that are receiving training, which will then free the space and we then recruit. But with the challenges with the composition of employees, we're not able to then have that leverage in terms of managing that. So then it then create a gap in terms of the functions that need to be performed. So hence we then have limited hands on the deck to do the work. And as I indicated, the incongruent skill set as a result of the department training and placement policies, which is now basically open to every official within the department, over time they will qualify. So it's basically things that has been negotiated with the organized labor, which is the current policy that is in existence. And then we then have one area in terms of the lack of clarity in the reporting lines for the strategic support unit. As the model that the department adopted, because in the past, the finance as well as the corporate management services were centralized within one branch, which is basically that the work that is performed in mission, the officials that are placed in mission doing administrative function will then report to the branch that deals with administration. which then free the line function department that dealing with the line function work to then concentrate on that. So now, over time, basically in 2002-03-04, the department adopted an approach where they need to decentralize certain services, where units at the level of a director was created to support the line function to carry that responsibility. So which then create a vacuum where the administrative branches were no longer having direct contact with what is being implemented by missions. So which then create a challenge in terms of how that is managed. So then decrease a reporting line problem. Because one of the issues was that maybe there should be a solid line to the line department, or also a dotted line to the administration, which by its nature creates a vacuum in terms of how that is managed. So the current model is that the missions for the official that are performing administrative services, they report to the line function department. So which now the administration, including the branch finance, then issue directives. But if they are not implemented, there are no avenue for consequence management that is direct. So that part is within the line function department. And the only time when we are called upon is when we need to then manage things that are no longer within the control. So that's where we then have that challenges. So that is the issue. And the major part, is the absence of an integrated financial management system, which is cut across in terms of the... So the current system that we have as a department was basically based on a cash accounting, which is the mission cash book, which was more on the Excel, which we're trying to upgrade. And one of the challenges which we went to Treasury on several occasions to then request that we be prioritized in the implementation of the integrated financial management system, because we are not supported by the basic accounting system or logis, so that avenue it is not there. So whatever we receive, what is captured in mission, it means that it finds its way into the system. And if it's not properly reviewed, it means that the outcome will not be what we had expected in terms of that. So that is the problem area in terms of the cash, to say we don't have a system that we manage this, where we then to conduct a reconciliation. And what we then indicate to say, what is the way forward to say, how do we then address this? Because we can't then say we don't have a system and we don't do anything. So what we then say, we look at the how we revise our standard operating procedure in terms of how we then looking at the fact that we don't have the numbers, and we then have the issue of compensation of employee ceiling, which we can't run away because we can't be able to spend more than what we have. So then we then look at the missions that are that have contributed to the qualification in terms of the cash. So now the mission that contributed, which are around about 23 missions, the analysis indicate that the at the end of the reporting period, they were in our bookkeeping. This is what I want to read. In the bookkeeping, the account shows that there was overdrawn in some, and there was less drawing in some in terms of the funds transfer. So how we manage this is that we then create an account for funds that we transfer to missions. To say if we're transferring money to Dubai, there will be an account that is created on a basic accounting system, which is BAS. So it means that which require that every month that account must be reconciled with the expenditure that comes from the mission, with the revenue that was collected from the mission and with any money that is then moved to support other missions. So we can talk about intercompany transfer, if you want to use that name to say, if we have got, for example, MTN, which operates in Iran. So Iran, you got sanctions. So it means that they will need to be supported. So if the officials that are in Iran, they can't open a foreign bank account. So the arrangement was that in such a situation that the mission in Dubai will be able to pay their allowances. So in our case, the mission in Dubai pays allowances for the official that are stationed in other mission, that will be Tehran in Iran, Syria in Damascus. So which means that the money that we then book from our side, from Reserve Bank, all money that is required for Syria to be paid in Dubai will then be transferred to Dubai. So which means that the money that goes to the bank in Dubai will be more than their budget. So the money that goes to Syria will be less than the budget, because some of the money is spent in Dubai. But on the expenditure side, that problem is addressed, because when Dubai spend money, they will use the financial allocation codes for that particular mission. So that part has been addressed. But the part that was not addressed is the funds, in terms of that this funds is going to this account, but you must be able to then have a reference so that you can able to then follow that, so that we can then make that adjustment. That is the part that has been lacking in terms of the controls that we require in that. We're saying we then look at that to see the mission in Sudan, Khartoum, also have challenges in terms of accounts. So we have now also emerging challenge that is coming in the Central Africa region in terms of shortage of foreign currencies. So it means that countries have now tightened up to say they are not going to allow even diplomats to open foreign bank accounts. So what they then do, they can only allow for countries and companies to operate a corporate account, which then the colleagues no longer having individual accounts for them to pay. So we then have to see how best we need to address that. And one of the issues to then look at the encouraging colleagues to open accounts locally here, in terms of the relaxation of the foreign exchange rate controls, in terms of managing that. So that is the part that we are engaging with the colleagues, because it is their decision for them to open account wherever they deem fit. So that is the issue that we are looking at. And the part that we then look at the development of system description to say, we are now reviewing that, which we currently trying to automate that process to say we can't then leave this as a high-risk area and not attend it. One of the issues that based on the financial report, we do have information in our system in terms of funds that has been transferred, expenditure that has been incurred, and revenue that has been generated in terms of that. So what we are now doing is to then make that process to interface automatically, so that we don't have any manual intervention. The work that will be done by official is then to then follow on the variances that they identified in that process. So that is the part in terms of the how we then look at the cash and cash equivalent, and then and this function is performed directly by finance, so there's no any other branch that is involved at head office except in missions in terms of that process. So we are saying in page 6, we look at to change the accounting treatment of funds transfers to say we need to then have a side of any movement of funds in the account to say We need to then record receipt of funds to the cash book in line with the new system description. So in the past, as I indicated, in the cash, because the money didn't move out from our account, but it moved out from the sub-account, which means that the balance remains the same until there's an expense that manages that. So that is the part that we say, no, all CSM, in terms of these are corporate service managers who are in missions, to say when they receive funds, they need to then report to head office. And then we then grant, there won't be any transfer between missions without receiving approval from head office. This was there, but unfortunately the enforcement of that was then lacking in terms of that. And then we then, in terms of the confirmation, this is what the banks are doing, so that this confirmation that are submitted to head office in terms of the transfer that has been made, and also then to perform a reconciliation funds for transfer as well as the money that has been dispersed in terms of that. And then we then say the chief director of financial management will then be responsible for receiving that to do perform reconciliation. When we say third day of each month, we're looking at the third day reporting on the activity of the previous month. So we're putting these days based on the time frames that we must comply in terms of the PFMA in reporting in terms of section 44C when we report on our expenditure on a monthly basis. So then we also want to put an additional measure to then request bank accounts confirmation of all the banks that we operate, including missions. Well, one of the issues, Honorable Chair, that we find as a weakness was that in countries where the language barrier, the function is solely delegated to a local official, which means locally recruited personnel, and the corporate service manager is not hands-on. And we then raise the issue to say, when it comes to the money for yourself, do you do the same? Because you go to the bank and able to say the issue of language barrier doesn't exist. But for the state funds, it's different. So we then want to enforce that to say, all CSM, because they are the one and the head of mission, they are the one who opened the bank account. So no locally recruited personnel opens the bank account. So we want them to then follow through on their responsibility in terms of safeguarding the state resources. Then we then look at to see how do we then bring in the SSU, the strategic support unit, in the whole process, because they should then monitor the performance of the account. So we want to then by December, after we've done the work, to then devolve certain functions to their area of responsibility, so that they can able to then manage a view and report and monitor what the movement. So it's basically our mission cash book system, which we, as I indicated, it's got areas where you've got expenditure, revenue, as well as cash that has been received during the year. So as part of the control measure, in terms of the reporting, this is what we want to enforce, that we have not done this. When we prepare the report on the 15th of each month, the report solely comes from finance. So in the current arrangement, no any other branch submit their returns each month, which you find that it is not how we're supposed to be. In the past, we used to, every other unit that is a call center, will then provide their returns in terms of what they have spent against what they have projected for the month. So currently, that area is not operating. So we solely submit reports that comes from finance without necessarily talking to what has been put in the APP, which is one of the weaknesses that we have identified. And then the other part that we also was the petty cash that AG raised. And the petty cash foreign, this is in the past, we used to receive foreign currency, especially for the missions that were in sanctions. We used to then receive money as a department from the bank, commercial banks, and then we then transfer that to the mission concern. So with the revision of how Treasury looked at the risk, that we no department or we don't operate that account. That account is closed. We used also to provide foreign subsistence and travel allowance, SNT, when people goes abroad in areas where there were challenges in terms of how you then use your debit card. But all now, the transfer is that all officials in the department, then they receive their SNT through their bank accounts. So there's no money that is being operated anymore. So that has been closed 2 years ago, which now the challenge was basically, as it was manual intensive, that there was a register that was kept, and whatever that was transferred to the system was a lump sum amount, which didn't have the details in terms of that process. So we were analyzing that so that we then finalize and close the account properly so that we don't have any balances that are outstanding in terms of that. And that's the reconciliation. Then the other part that we're initiating is to, we're changing the way the MCS is configured, 5.1, so that we can have a direct interface. So as that any money that moves between missions, we should be able to pick up from our system so that we don't rely on an individual in terms of whatever audit trail that is required in terms of that. Then we are looking at to roll out this through a pilot by 30th of November to the missions in the Caribbean and America. So we've selected this based on the connectivity to say we need to then look at how best we can able to improve that, and the rollout will then envisage that because of the pressure that we have by the first week of December should have completed this. So this is the part that we say these are measures that we can implement as interim to stabilize the current environment, as we are looking to then establish a unit that is treasury function, that have all the functionality in terms of how best we can manage that. So we're currently discussing with Treasury in terms of how best we can then improve the control environment. And we want to then have a meeting with Treasury and Reserve Bank so that they can then assist whatever money that has been transferred or been requested should then be allocated based on our standard operating procedure in terms of our standard chart of accounts, so that we then manage that differently. So that is the part in terms of the cash, and it's purely a bookkeeping matter, but we commit that the DG commits that we then need to go back and do a proper full investigation on the whole account, so that we then able to then understand if there's any leakage that may have occurred in the past. So that is the phase two in terms of that. So phase one was to stabilize the environment in terms of how we manage cash going forward, and we believe that this will help us in managing that. Then the next part is the misstatement of financial statements. Honorable Butcher, this is one area that has been an issue, and the way it was attributed was based on the fact that the finance team doesn't have the requisite skill in terms of preparing the financials. Just to give a background, Honorable Chair and members, is that the finance are prepared based on the report that we receive from mission. So it's basically the trial balance, the general ledger. That so when we prepare that, it is based on what is on the face of the trial balance. It is not based on the detailed transactions that were incurred over a period of 12 months. So that is the first part, to say whatever is processed from a bookkeeping point of view will be the outcome that will be presented at the end of the reporting period. So in this case, we then have a situation where the input at source is incorrect, which then will not able to pick it up in 8-11, because until we go back and look at the source document to say this is what the transaction is all about. So, and the system, as I indicated, didn't have any controls on how we then limit the utilization of codes. So currently, the system, anyone can use any code, even when there's no money in that line item, the expenditure will go through. And the payment that they made, it is not supported by anything. It's basically outside the process. So we want to then to say, in order to eliminate this, we need to then implement controls. So these are the things that must happen before a transaction is concluded in terms of that. So now what of the areas which then contribute is the issue to say we don't have an integrated financial, as I indicated, and then the delay of submission of monthly reports. So the arrangement currently is that the machine will then spend and submit their report at the end of the month. So during the month, you will not receive anything that comes from the machine. And the reason why it's designed like this, in the past, initially, before Y2K, the accounts for the department were closing 3 months after. So that was an anomaly. So what then measures was put in place to say if you are closing account after 3 months, so it's against the provision of the PFMA. So it means that the department is non-compliant in terms of that provision. So the arrangement was that they will then submit the expenditure, which is 1 month delay. So one of the central point on this is basically our ICT in terms of our data centers. So currently we have data centers that are regional. So for Asia, you then have a data center in Singapore, for Middle East, and part of Europe, you then have a data center in Vienna, and then the rest of Europe, you then have a data center in London, and for Americas, you then have a data center in Washington, and for South America and Caribbean, you then have a data center in Brasilia. So all these are fragmented data centers. So it means that whatever machine spend, they then the information go and rest in the The data center, in terms of they are fragmented in those regions, and then create a problem in terms of how we integrate that, and there's a delay in the submission of the accounts. We are not able to view the accounts live, which is the issue that we think with the advent of technology we should be able to do that, and we are engaging ICT to then modernize the infrastructure so that we are able to have one data center that able to then able to do that. So it's more like a legacy design, which you then see that there are systems that are fragmented that are not helping the department to move forward. So, and then the capacity constraint I've already indicated as one of the issues, and the quality, as I indicated, the quality is compromised in terms of audit. So we don't have any pre-audit before the month is closes. And when the month closes, and that's when the AG, when they go the request sample, then they find that there are transactions that are not done correctly. So in terms of that part, as well as the disclosure in terms of the irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure. Honorable Chair, the part of the irregular expenditure or supply chain, there's financial delegation of authority, which empowers certain managers to finalize procurement at their levels. So it means that in terms of the procurement below 200,000, it is finalized by the head of the branch, which means that the DDG of the branch finalized that. And the arrangement that there was no any checks and balances in terms of whether the procurement is meeting all the requirements in terms of the PPFMA as well as the delegated authority. So that is the part. Then the procurement below 500, then initiated and recommended by the DDG of the branch, but is finalized by the CFO in terms of that. So, but any procurement that is below 200,000, so the branch finance and management will not have sight, especially in missions, of what happened, because there's no any reporting line in terms of that process. So there's no any direct reporting line. So as I indicated, the workflow remains a challenge in terms of the supervision. So this area, it is happening at the bookkeeping level, which is basically you require accountants to perform these functions. So you need people who at least have a junior degree or national diploma to be able, in finance, to be able to do this type of work. So if we don't have that, we have a challenge. So the problem that we have is that we don't have available posts to advertise to then recruit such skills, because the skills move around in the department. Then what we then looking to say, we need to reconfigure our system to ensure that there's no spending affected without availability of budget. So one of the control measures is to then enhance the control environment for the current system, the mission cashback system, so that we then manage from a control environment, so that any payment should not be processed within the system that will come valid without a confirmation of the budget. And then the granting of the SSU, we think that is a control, so that they have oversight responsibility on the managing of that. And we then also look at the skills audit, Honorable Chair, to say we feel that the finance environment requires some specialized skills so that we can able to then improve the environment. The issue we then talk about the competency framework, to say the last time we've done that was basically on look at the job evaluation, which has got its own limitation, because we are now looking at an incumbent, an employee, and we're not looking at the work environment. So we look at the competency that are required, and the head office is currently looking at the conduct of the skills audit, so that we then understand with empirical evidence into say what is it, and then we look at the work study in terms of how we then incorporate technology to say what are the issues that we're able to then do without necessarily having a permanent person overseeing that, but that information is available through the use of technology. So now, the third area is the supply chain. The supply chain, there are findings that are repeating for some many years. One of the reasons, Chair, is based on the same as finance, is based on the skill set for the people at a clerical and supervisory level. I will share the composition of the team that is in finance. It is one area, Honorable Chair, that in terms of the sourcing of skills was done through an internship program. People who came through the internship, who have a senior certificate, they, after 1 year, they were then absorbed within the supply chain based on the capacity challenges. So we will address the numbers, but we're not addressing the quality of the skills that we require. So that is the majority of the people that are currently doing clerical and supervisory job. So then you'll find that there will be omission in terms of the checklists that develop. The checklists that are developed, but you find that proper process was not followed in terms of procurement, but an order is issued, which is one of the challenges to say, if now the procurement, as I indicated, for below 200,000 that is done at the office, it means that the order will be issued, which now the CFO will not have signed, but in terms of how we manage that. So we then say, no, the chief director, the director supply chain must then manage that, the order book for all procurement below 200,000 that are done at head office, so that we then have a responsible person that will be accountable in terms of that part. So we then have the findings, the deviation approved, requirement not met. So as I indicated, Honorable Chair, that the message that we've been communicating to the department was to encourage them to seek for condonation. And to say, you can then incur cost, and at the end of the reporting period, you will then request condonation. To say, no, we can't then manage the organization in that way. Because we need to then meet all the requirements of the PFMA in terms of that process, so that we then that we seek deviation if it's necessary before we can procure any services, so that we're compliant. Then the functionality criteria not used, which I'll talk to the details of each finding which follow that, is basically the compliance issues. Which we have developed a compliance certificate, but all that, you find that all the compliance certificate is signed by all relevant people, which then you find that means that there was no any oversight. People were just signing for the sake of the matter to move to the next level in terms of that. Then the irregular expenditure identified, I think this has to do with the charter flight for South African Air Force. So in the past, Honorable Chair, in terms of the chartering of flight, in the delegation that we have, is that the only approval to charter flight is for the executive, the principal. And the process is that every year the department has been participating in the transversal contract with the Treasury. So during this period, 2018-19, there was no contract that was signed. So which means that in terms of the delegation of authority, which Treasury has revised in terms of deviation, which from competitive bidding, it means that it must be approved by National Treasury. So in this case, it was not done in terms of that requirement, which there are reasons that they attribute, but in terms of the compliance, that process was not done. So then the services were procured without following processes. And the evaluation and adjudication criteria not stated. This, as I indicated, is one of the issues in terms of how the area, which we had a workshop with National Treasury, in terms of the importance of a specification committee, in terms of how that should then be managed, because we then put specification from the end user. So the unit that is looking for services, they're the one who put the specification, which is basically And when they put conditions, which I'll elaborate to specific issues in terms of when they put the criteria in terms of compliance, they put things that are not available, which it becomes a problem. So if they specify things that are not, in our my view as a CFO, is not compliance issues. So things that are issued by a foreign government can be compliance to prevent local bidders to bid. So that is the issue that I'll talk to in detail. So if you go to the deviation page 15, the deviation approval requirement got met. So this is basically the department was trying to put the implementation on investigating irregular expenditure that were reported in the previous years. That is from 2016-17 and going back in terms of what are the issues. So the department went to Treasury and request deviation to request to have a closed process in the appointing of the team that should investigate the irregular expenditure. So in this case, then the department already had a service provider in mind who was invited, and the only indicator was the sole service provider. But Treasury indicated that no, the deviation is granted to then go on a closed tender, which means that there will be more than one service provider will be consulted, which the department didn't follow that. Then they appointed the service provider that they had signed to Treasury. So on the review by Auditor General, then they find that there was internal control deficiency in terms of not adhering to the condition stipulated by National Treasury, which then the contract was then considered to be irregular in terms of the process that were followed. And one of the challenges was the department indicated that it was a sensitive matter and required to be treated in a different way. But the even the finalization of that process wasn't concluded by the internal audit, and the Director General Supply Chain was not involved in that process. But they came in when they had to issue the order in terms of that process. So that is the deviation to say the department didn't comply with the approval terms and conditions from National Treasury in the implementation of that award. Then the SEM functionality criteria not used in evaluation process. So as I indicated that the procurement for goods and services were done by the in terms of specification by the end user, but the end user is not necessarily familiar with the updates that are provided in terms of National Treasury or supply chain. They are not familiar with the Treasury regulations and practice law if there are changes in terms of that. So now in this case, it's a request for quotation, which is procurement below 500,000. So it means that there are areas that you will then require functionality in terms of whatever services that you want to specify, or you will go straight to the price because you are clear in terms of what type of service you want. So if you want a car, you will then specify what type of car you want, capacity and all that, which basically you can then not able to give that. So the request was only valid on price and BE, so it means that what was specified in the specification was then not used to conclude the award. But in terms of the process of awarding, in terms of the price, the threshold was basically should be adjudicated based on price and BEE. based on that. But unfortunately, the specification was not saying that, which is basically, we can say the specification was not correct in terms of how the procurement should then be adjudicated. So that the part that we then indicate to say, and this was squarely on the issue of the supply chain chief director in terms of managing that to enforce compliance in terms of the checklist, to say if things are not in line, we then need to go back and request services based on the correct evaluation criteria in terms of price and BEE. So one of the issues is, as I indicated, that the supply chain will then have to manage this from a checklist compliance before approval, to say, and it's part of the performance agreement for all senior managers in supply chain, to say there's no procurement that will be done without meeting all the compliance requirement, and that will then be deemed as irregular, and the official concern will then have to then deal with the consequences that come. Then the deviation, irregular expenditure identified, which I already indicated, to say the executive did chartering on the flight, and the deviation was recommended so by the CFO. So can amend that to say CFO acting, not the person who was acting at the time, made the recommendation, and which then approved by the director general. So any procurement that is above 500,000 should go out on competitive bidding, unless there's a deviation source from treasury that then is basically straightforward. So any procurement that has been sourced should then be subjected to a competitive bidding. And then in page 20, we say that the monthly checks of new practice note. So one of the issues that we committed is that, and which is one of the areas that we're not doing as a department, to communicate the treasury instructions that we receive from treasury, which is now responding to our environment, to say how does it apply to DECO in terms of whatever issues that we need to indicate, so that we then manage that differently. But this is strictly understanding laws and regulations in terms of the delegated authority. Same applies to the page 21. It is basically the areas that, because these are the findings, not which that comes from the AG management report, in terms of the area, to say this was the deviation that was approved by the Director General in terms of the not in line with the ministerial handbook. So that is the issue that we indicated there, or found not to be consistent with that. Then page 23, award of not approved by the delegated authority. Honorable Chair, there was a function within the department that was held in December 11, 2018, which no approval was granted for the service provider to come and render services during the event. But the service provider did come to the event and provided services without even receiving a letter of award or any order for that matter. So that is the issue that was then found not to be consistent with the framework. Then the page 24, we then look at to say what are the measures that we want to see. We say when this is what we've indicated, that there won't be any services that will be rendered by anybody without receiving an award, because that brings litigation to the department in terms of its processes. So the order is centralized. So we have instances where other people had order books that they were using outside the supply chain. Then the page 25, evaluation and adjudication criteria not stated. So these are the terms of reference in terms of the evaluation and the procurement of the official vital. This matter, Honorable Chair, we applied as a department the threshold as approved by Treasury, but in terms of that, we then, before the award was done, because this award was done by the Adjudication Committee, the office concerned was requested to confirm and brought the threshold to their attention to say this is the threshold that the Minister of Finance had determined in terms of cost containment measures. But at the time, the matter was then advised to say the ministerial help applies at the time. So that's what the response that we received from the relevant office in terms of managing this. So but the procurement proceeded based on the provision of the ministerial help. And when the Auditor General looked at it and found that there was, we should have complied with the threshold as determined by the Minister of Finance, and which basically the issue of which one was applicable at the time before the ministerial book was then reviewed. Then the goods and services in terms of page 27, procured outside the scope of the contract, venue and facility services procured through a travel agent meant for travel arrangement service. So this happened, Honorable Chair, during the when ministers were allocated new responsibilities in the department. We didn't have a travel agent in terms of our services, and the reason why we didn't have that was, in my view, as a CFO at the time, when we tried to do the travel agent, say most of the travel agent that we do is abroad, so all these services are managed by our missions. And we then qualify for tax exemption because we then produce diplomatic privileges. So if we do a travel from here, it means that you will then abide by the tax regulation. So it means that we will end up spending more in terms of providing accommodation abroad. So then this part was that the Department of Human Settlement had a contract as part of a transitional period. The Director General approved that the travel for the executive then should then manage through as an interim for that period, for the transition, so that there are no any challenges. However, that was then approved even by Treasury, but unfortunately we then added more services that are not part of the scope, which then create a lot of problems in terms of adherence with the prescript. So that is the challenge that we then have, that there are services that were procured through the travel agent, which were not part of what has been approved in terms of that. So that is the part that wants to indicate. The travel agent in question was travel in terms of the work that they do for Department of Human Settlement. So they didn't have any contract with the department, if I put it that way. Then page 29, so all this was then so the AG indicated that there was the Office of the Minister didn't ensure that the travel is only used for the procurement of travel management. So here there is no any record that indicated to say whether there was any approval or any decision in terms of the ministry, because the ministry were managing their own travel, so which had challenges in terms of accountability. Then page 30, and this was multi-choice expenditure, DSTV, which was really unfortunate in terms of the sole service provider to say there was no any policy that indicate that the department should then spend money on DSTV, because this was not included in the ministerial handbook at the time in terms of how they look at that. So, but we've subsequently corrected that in terms of sole service provider, so that we are clear in terms of what we require in terms of that. Then page 32, we then incomplete and accurate disclosure. This is what I was referring to in terms of the financial statement, in terms of misstatement. So these are, there are things that will be picked by the Auditor General during the audit, because they will go into detail in terms of the source document. So we will not be in a position to able to do that on a thorough basis in the absence of the systems. So we then move to page 34. It talks to that in terms of the disclosure of the prior year. So you know that anything that is picked, because whatever the AG look, they look at the sample. So each and every year, when they audit, if they find a matter that was not audited in the past, so it means that they have now irregular expenditure, then we'll then have to go to the prior years, which means that there will be some reinstatement that will be done on the financials in terms of the disclosure that arises from that. Then the child irregular expenditure, page 35, is basically there was a lot of work that were done in the preparation of the BRICS summit that we hosted, which was the ministry was taking part in terms of this process, which was one of the unfortunate experience in terms of the matter managed from the ministry, not necessarily managed from the procurement side. So the ministry was moving on this aspect in terms of, and the time constraint in terms of what need to happen, because there was no plan in the demand management to do the work in terms of the refurbishment of our protocol lounge, and this is the lounge in OR Tambo International Airport. So that is the work. It was done outside the demand management plan, and it was not part of the property plan in terms of how we then deal with that. So as I indicated that page 37, there was no contract with the supplier for the travel agent, which is physical travel, which would then the department source services, which I think they had a separate order book which was outside the procurement side, which then indicate same applies to the disregard, which is page 39, which the BAC, the bid adjudicating committee, didn't approve the procurement, but the process proceeded in terms of that procurement. If we then move to page 41. Basically to say we're going to correct by issuing instruction, but the issue is enforcement, that we should not be able to do things that are not in line with the law in terms of the procurement. No matter what pressure one is finds, his himself should not then influence, override his treasury regulation. Then supply chain, page 3042, that services were obtained without obtaining minimum number of quotation. This is basically one of the challenges to say the department, because we don't have any exemption, we then used to, we must then use the deviation. The deviation for procurement be low 500,000 by National Treasury is delegated to the accounting office, which is within the department ability to then implement things the right way. So it means that people were not able to request that deviation, but they then proceeded with the procurement in terms of that services. So we then say we're going to issue services, but as I indicated, the control that we have is where we then issue orders. But the areas that is mission-based will not be in a position to then really control that, because that will be the area that the DDGs of the branches and the DG operate in terms of the delegation. Then if we look at the expenditure on behalf of other departments, three conditions not obtained for goods and services procured from partner departments. This is basically talking to the same issue of the travel agent, to say, because we say we're piggybacking from the contract that awarded to another department in terms of that process. And the area that I want to highlight now is on asset, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I can start by saying we received our first qualification on asset on the 13-14 financial year. Not because in the previous years asset was not a problem. In the previous years, Honorable Chair and Members, the Auditor General was accepting a certificate signed by the head of mission and the corporate sales manager as evidence that assets are managed properly. So there was no any report that came to the system. There was no any physical asset verification conducted. So that was the issue. So whatever we did in the asset register was basically to then comply to say with an asset register and all that. But indeed, the system that we were using at the time was more of a document management, which we call HARDCAD system, the system that is used by the lawyers in terms of that part. So in 2015, as part of the measures that we needed to do as a department, was to then explore what a better system that we can use. In the process, we're buying computers and laptops and desktop for missions and head office. And we bought those computers through a lease. So one of the conditions of the lease was that, because this, in terms of the reward and control, we know that we have transferred risk to the department, but there must be an assurance that the department will fulfill its obligation in terms of servicing the contract, which was basically 36 months, which is paid quarterly. And in that process, then they put a system which we call Netrace, which will then track the computers. So one of the reasons that we advised to say we are a secure department, we will not be happy to have our information monitored somewhere where the server is sitting in Canada. So one of the control is that we then need to then install the system for monitoring at our headquarters so that we then mitigate the risk. So in that process, the system monitors then is an enterprise system which then perform other functions. And all that we then required was to say we need to have access. So it means that we need to then pay licenses for the number of officials that will be additional to the tracking of the computers, which is basically one of the issues to say. It means that the computers will be able to be attended to, and then all that we need to do now is to then deal with the physical asset in terms of furniture to say how do we do that. So we had challenges in implementing that in terms of and we are the first department in government to put that system in place. And the second department, which is an enterprise, is a department of, it's a DBSA in terms of that system. So everyone in government is following suit in using that system. It's unfortunate that DECO is used as an example, but the results, we have not seen that in terms of this system. So we then have difficulties. In 2015, we were not able to, 15-16, we were not able to utilize the system. We had some disagreement with the chief director, who was responsible for the supply chain and asset management, that they would not migrate to NetTrades because the NetTrades would be attract a disclaimer to the department, and they were then qualified. So in 2016-17, that is the year that we then received an unqualified audit, because I insisted, Honorable Chair, to say we can't then keep on reporting something that is not good when we have a system. So in that process, we had challenges in managing that. And one of the issues, the audit committee at the time, they made their task to say they need to then manage that. And they said, no, well, we need to get in the treasurer approval to implement that. But say, no, this RBI system, and it's within the accounting officer responsibility to able to then able to implement measures to improve financial reporting. So the scope of work, Honorable Butcher, was only finalized in February 2016 for the reporting for 31st May, which with a short time we managed to then produce evidence to the Auditor General. In 2017-18, we were not able to replicate that because the license came to an end after 36 months to say, if we renew this system, we're going to attract irregular expenditure, because the system was piggybacking on the taking of the computers, which the lease was 36 months. So as I speak, Honorable Chair, the lease for the computers, which are no longer working, which is more than 5 years, we're still paying as a department for rental for that, which is basically we have not done anything to replace the computers, even though we do have the funds available in the budget. As we are paying, we have the funds to replace the computers, and we don't have a contract in servicing that. So in beginning of 2019, we then received a response from Treasury to say, no, we can't participate in the IFMS as a pilot. Our request is denied, and we can only consign the contract with the NetTrades for another 3 years. But the implementation of that only happened on the 6th of August, in terms of how we then reactivate that. So that is the current system that we are now using. So AG concluded in 2018-19 that the department doesn't have a reliable asset register. It's maintaining its asset register on an Excel spreadsheet, which we understand the challenges. So now the process that we've been doing was to then migrate all the information that is on Excel to the NetTrades system, so that we can then have a proper asset management system in terms of how we manage. One of the benefits that we then accrue, which we have seen before, is that the information is got audit trail. So you know when the asset is moved, transferred, because one of the findings that contributed also to the qualification is that the department, in trying to manage the mission as one unit, was to say, because you got one head of mission, all officials, they all report to the head of mission, irrespective of which department they come from at in South Africa, so that we manage that. Then we then, the TDGs sign a memorandum of understanding where asset is bought. At the end of the financial year, that asset is transferred to the asset of the department, so that we don't have assets that belong to other departments that have no presence, because most of the department always were scaling down, means that when the post became vacant, they will not fill it, but there are state assets, which those assets then are transferred to the state in how we then manage that aspect. So in the handing over, because there were movement of staff during the 18-19 financial year, in terms of bringing new people who were within the system, and I must say the colleagues that came in, they were there before they went posting. So that is the classical example where people are appointed at the senior management level for a specific job, then they will then be eligible to be able to be considered for posting missions. So after 4 years they came back, 5 years they came back to the position, but they were not aware of those decisions that were taken in the absence in terms of the memorandum of understanding where assets are transferred. So based on that, all the assets that were transferred to the department during the period until 1819 were then not forming part of the report of assets of the department. So assets were then removed from the asset register, which then confirms that those assets were supposed to be part of the register, but they are not anywhere because the other department is no longer reporting on them for the healing of our process. So that was what happened. So now we're saying when we have a system, that will not happen because the information is there, sitting, and it's supported by approval at the right end. So the in terms of these findings, we talk about existence. That's where it starts, to say the Water General will then visit missions and they're able to then take a register, and in the past they will say there's a mission register and head office register, which means that you've got two asset registers, which then they say, no, we work on this register as missions, head office, and this is what we've reviewed. So there were challenges in terms of reporting which one, because the report that must be always regarded as official one is one that comes from head office. If there are any discrepancies, then there must be a process in addressing those inconsistencies in a proper way, which the policy is there, Honorable Chair, the framework is there, so there's no gap in terms of the work that is done in terms of leadership, but the problem comes with the execution. And what we have then realized is that this function has been delegated to the locally recruited staff. There's no oversight. So we're saying with the metrics, the benefit is that will be done using a mobile device to scan the asset. And that you have a dashboard in terms of how you see the monitoring of that. So we have moved, Honorable Chair, in terms of migration, in terms of these processes, which then we have submitted the report. We've conducted the first asset verification. We've conducted the first physical verification in August. in preparation for the interim audit. So I can report, the report that we are submitting as part of the supporting document for the asset register for end of October, which is tomorrow, is coming from the Trace System in terms of the report that we are presenting to the Auditor General of Audit. However, one of the challenges that we still have, because we only implemented now, we've not done the fiscal verification using the NetRIS. So that was done outside the NetRIS as manual as part of data integrity, so that we can test what has been migrated from Excel and what is on the ground. So we then request that after we've done that, we'll then do another physical asset verification that is done by the system, which we think that that will then help us to have a credible, reliable asset register in terms of the. So in terms of the page 49, which I indicated that there was no electronic online asset register, which the department used Excel. So the assets of the department is more than 186,000. So this asset, Honorable Chair, is big, not based on the number of offices, but the number of officials that are provided. So we have a foreign service dispensation that regulates this environment, which now all officials that are transferred abroad, they qualify for housing with fully finished. So we tried in the process to see how best do we then reduce this risk, because we are now more qualified on issues that relate to the privilege of officials, not necessarily on service delivery issues. So we then encourage people to then consider fully finished apartments, so that we then eliminate this risk to a certain degree, which we have not succeeded in this case. So now one of the issue to say the non-integration was the process was that the asset management was managed independently of financial records. Because if you talk about new addition, which means new assets have been acquired in the current financial year, so we should be able to then get the information directly from our mission cash book system, so that we then able to then have a proper audit trail and able to perform reconciliations that are credible in terms of that area. So now the, as I indicated, the capacity always been a problem, because one of the issue was it was centralized, as people in the, as I indicated, in all areas of administration will be eligible to go for training and eventually placement abroad. So you then find a situation where you don't have senior managed supervisors in the asset unit. You didn't have an assistant director. You didn't have a deputy director. Even currently, you don't have that resource because they have now been posted. So at least the director is now working directly with the team that is managing the assets. And it requires a certain level of analytical ability in terms of how you then extrapolate data in terms of coming up with the relevant reports, so that it can then raise correct exceptions that will be able to follow up and then be addressed in terms of that part. So in terms of the work that we have done when we migrating the data, we then work with internal audit. So the internal audit is there for a director who is responsible for ICT. So they are currently, in terms of that data integrity, they are using the computer assisted audit system, the CATS, in terms of how we then follow data in terms of what has been captured. So we've generated many reports in terms of data cleansing that we have done as part of the quality assurance, that the information that we are presenting for audit is indeed credible. So as I indicated, that the system will then improve data integrity, audit trade, and one of the part that we are finalizing is the interface between NetTrace and the financial management system. So what we have done now is that for any transaction to be concluded for payment in machines, it means that there must be a barcode issued that goes to the NetTrace system without any intervention from anyone, to say that would then raise an exception to say there's a new asset that has been bought, so we don't have this asset in our register. So then require the official machine to then submit the relevant documents by going to register the asset for the first time using the scanning system. So it won't be any physical completing of forms, it will be done through the system NetTrace, so that whatever information, and head office will then verify by looking at the source documents and the necessary approval that were granted in terms of the acquisition of assets. So that is the measure that we are putting in place in terms of how we then improve this environment. And that also have a lot of reports that we have then developed so that we can able to manage the asset better in terms of the exception report. Because our part is the reconciliation, and we've then look at the duplication of work that was happening, that the reconciliation in terms of the reporting of the asset was done by finance unit, which was also understaffed. So we've then released that resource to say, well, that function will be done automatically, so that we don't have any manual intervention, and there will be the reduction in terms of that. So the benefit is that this is going to be a real-time electronic system, so that whenever the submission is done, it's available for everyone who's got access to view and make a necessary intervention if so required. And the in verification of asset, our standard operating procedure, we must do it annually, which is basically be done through the system. We've done it manually, but want to do it again before we do it for final, so that we then do at least in the current financial year before March, we'll then have performed three asset verification, two using the system, and one we've already done through the manual verification. So at the end of the day, we then want to then do monthly reports, which will be then the head of missions, which will then submit to the head of the branch, as I indicated, that the missions reports to the DDG of the branch, and we then now indicate that this is what the minister confirmed, that we must then, as a CFO, issue directives to the DDGs of the branch in terms of things that need to be done. If things are not done, then we should be able to then report in terms of whatever consequence management. And the message that I received was that if I don't do it, I'm the one who's going to receive the consequence management in terms of the minister directive on this part, to say this is how we should then manage that. So the other part that we've done is to say we've taken cognizance that not everyone is at the same level in terms of skills. So the prioritization was to then train the officials that are currently managing assets. So one of the tools that we also use, Chairperson, is that during this period, the department is busy with the, what we call it, budget midterm review. We just concluded where all corporate service managers are invited to come and present their work for the past 6 months, which the expectation is that the head of mission will have signed off this report, and it's part of the training that we then use, a platform that we use to then update corporate service managers on the area that need to be attended to. And we still have the people that are identified for posting. So currently the posting for or placement for December cycle is delayed. It's not yet finalized in terms of that process. And one of the areas that we are exploring is to then work with DTRD to then explore the e-learning so that we can then use that platform to then upskill and communicate the changes that are required in terms of that. And that's the part that we want to do. And then as I indicated, the inconsistency were identified, existing completeness, and which then affected the financial statement. And the other area was basically disposal of assets. One of the challenges is that we have committees in missions which were created to then act as the first layer of governance, which then require that all the process must be then recommended by the mission. But the challenge is that which then create discrepancies. When they recommend, they consider that recommendation as approval. So it means that whatever they recommended, they will then remove it from the asset register. But when the auditors arrive in the location, they will then find an asset on the floor which has been disposed according to the record. So those are the issues that we are addressing in terms of the assets. There was a specific question about the diplomatic bag, Honorable Chair, in terms of the contract. We had a contract for the diplomatic bag, which was basically awarded for a year. So normally in this case, the diplomatic bag contract is minimum 2 years. So I will explain what the diplomatic bag contract renders. It's one of the contracts that we share with Home Affairs in terms of implementation. So all applications for visa, for civic services, which is basically for all South Africans living abroad, they go to our missions and they apply for whatever document that they require, birth certificate, a smart card, so any other permit that they require, or passport, it will then go to the mission. The mission will then send through to DECO for processing ahead of it, because all these documents are resident in South Africa. So what they will do, they will send that. Now the challenge that we then have here is that the contract was signed 1 year, which followed the processes. Because if it was signed more than 2 years, which I think this is where I analyze it, we would have then moved to a different threshold for 3 years, because it was 3 years. So it means that any procurement of goods and services above 30 million should then have a subcontract to SMMEs in terms of the regulation. So it means that 3 years, it means that part was not achieved, and this was then reduced to 1 year, which means that it then accommodates, the law accommodates for the department to be able to proceed in that order. Now the next part was to then re-advertise for 2 years when the 1 year period lapses. Now the 2 year lapses, which I referred earlier to say, the end user comes with the specification, especially on issues of compliance, the response criteria to say this is where they wanted, which in actual fact they were supposed to contribute the functionality, what type of service they want and how they want that. Now the challenge is that in the specification that we put in terms of response criteria, not a single bidder met all the criteria in terms of the response. Because they want, in this case, they want TAPA. TAPA is a certificate that is issued by an institution in Germany, which is basically not local. So there's no any local company that has that certificate. So from the onset, it means that we are targeting other people, not people who pay taxes in terms of that. Then that was then re-advertised, as it is expected. But when the re-advertisement was then conducted, the same conditions were still there. There was no any revision of conditions. And one of the issues was that the period of advertisement normally is 21 days. So in this case, it was then even shortened to 14 days. So when the tender closes, we have already extended by 1 month. And the extension, honorable chair, was done by an end user. Because in the delegation, it empowers the end user to extend below 15%, which is now outside the contracting. Was the approval authority in terms of this was the accounting officer. So now the end user can approve extension for their own services, because you then deal with the issue of checks and balances that you no longer compliant with. Then the response that we then receive was still non-compliant. So we then went to National Treasury to request for a further extension for 3 months, which was duly granted by Treasury in terms of that. So that is the nature of the diplomatic pay contract. But one of the issues that I want to highlight, Honorable Chair, is that the 30% threshold in terms of the participation of SMMEs in this type of contract, it won't happen, because the only two service providers which I can mention, Chair, is the DHL and the Skynet. They've been rendering the service to the department for the longest time in terms of, and they don't want to partner with anyone in terms of the policy of government in terms of that. So that is the challenge that we have. Then the number six is the New York pilot project. So this is a project that was first initiated in 2012-13 financial year. And this is during the time when we were in the permanent, non-permanent seat. And our efforts in terms of Israeli consensus, as we had stated our ambition to be part of the Security Council on a permanent basis. And one of the issues to say, it will not be feasible to have a permanent representation when you don't have an address in New York, which is basically one of the strategic decisions that the department had to take in 2012-13 to say, how do we then manage this, to say we need to have a chancery. Because the chancery that we were sitting, and for some strange reasons, before 94, South African government had a property which was owned by the department. But after 94, we didn't have that. So people who have been in that area in New York, they know where was the South African mission before 1994. So that is the strategic to say, and one of the area was to then reduce in the high cost rental, to say how do we then minimize the cost. And the intention was, as I indicated, was to be present. And the lease agreement for the Chancery came to a hold agreement in 2014. In the lease agreement that was signed, I think it was in 1990, if I'm not mistaken, but automatic extension in terms of the number of years. So we've been there for quite some time. So now in 2014, then the property exchanged hands. SL Green was the landlord. Then they sold their rights to New York University Hospital, which becomes a hospital property. So based on this, to say, how do we then move forward as a department? As we've already stated, our intention to have our own property. If we then move to any other place, we'll still find ourselves in the same position. That is, the property will exchange hands for whatever reason, whether it's political reason, and to then count on our ambition so that we then manage that differently. So we then managed to then to say, how do we then appointed a service provider as a department agents to then assist the department to look at options to consider. So in 2015, we didn't get anything. Though two attempts to purchase an existing building failed. So one of the issues was a part that where you then need to go and look for property. So in New York, typical market is that you negotiate with yourself. You bid against yourself. You must always come with the highest bidder of your previous bid until you demonstrate how much money have you spent to the property. So we try to, there's a property that was, there's a garage, which I even went to see it. They were, after the landlord, the agent is identified, was now on the market, was advertised for 25 million. When we expressed our interest, it even went to 35 million, and they said that is not sufficient. So they didn't go well. So we looked for another church that is there, in 2nd Street, which is, they wanted to sell it for 100 million. US dollars, then unfortunately that what didn't happen. So in the process, we then approached Treasury to say, we don't have money in our budget of 100 million to go and do an outright purchase. How do we then deal with the issues? Because we've got a delegation as a department to procure leases for a maximum of 5 years. Any lease that you procure beyond that, you then need treasury approval, and then it then fits the definition of a finance lease in terms of your assessment. So that you need to then procure treasury approval. So in that, we then receive the approval to enter into a finance lease in 2015, which we then look to say, can we also put an option to buy? Because the triple P is not covered in terms of outside South Africa, which is basically what we then requested. So in that process, we then drafted a terms of reference to appoint a development partner for the design, construction, operation, maintenance, finance of suitable and sustainable office and residential accommodation for the RSA Diplomatic Missions Manhattan, which was done in March. Just to indicate, to say, one of the conditions or restrictions is the radius, that you must always be closer to the United Nations based on the traffic. There's high volume of traffic in Manhattan in terms of that. So it means that you must always be on the east side, not on the west side of Manhattan, in terms of identification. And just to indicate, to say, there's no vacant land in Manhattan in terms of the development. So in terms of that, so it means that whatever you look at acquiring something, and it must then talk to your purposes. So that was then approved. The terms of reference was approved in March 2016 by the accounting officer. The bid was advertised in the tender bulletin for 6 weeks. Bids received at closing date were evaluated by the bid evaluation committee and recommendation made by the bid adjudication committee as approved by the accounting officer. So all this process in terms of competitive bidding was then followed in terms of the minimum requirement. Now, on the conclusion, the accounting officer appointed Simeka Regiment Joint Venture as a preferred bidder subject to the successful conclusion of a lease agreement and due diligence. So this, there was clear intention from the department that we need to transfer the risk to whoever is successful so that we don't have any comebacks to say you are awarded, you are unable to deliver, then you want to claim compensation of loss of revenue. So that is the part that we then put to that. So based on the work that we've done, they listed possible site. In June 2016, the executive approved a property located in the 43rd and 2nd Avenue. So this property consisted of three townhouses together with air rights to be demolished and the land use for a new chancery development. So this process, Honorable Buche, was approved also by the minister at the time. So it's not a decision that was only taken by the official, because the delegation of acquiring properties is an executive decision in terms of which follow the opening of missions in terms of that. Then based on that, the due diligence of the property undertaken by Smeka revealed historical significance of the land. Furthermore, the preferred bidder reported that it failed to reach acceptable commercial terms with the seller and requested permission to pursue alternative sites. So this is the initial site that was then considered to be suitable based on the board that managed that. See, that site is a heritage, so it means that you can't change. You can't even build more. Or in terms of the RI, because they want to maintain that. So then a parallel process was then initiated. GECO and the preferred bidder engaged in negotiating on the lease agreement to be signed, which was the deliverables based on what needs to be done. And then the preferred bidder advised that further treasury approval are required, as the transaction is in essence a finance lease, which I indicated to say. Based on that, the department in November approached 2016, approached National Treasury and request approval to proceed in requesting a letter of credit. Basically, the letter of credit to say the foreign funders should then get a guarantee that if we the department default, the government will be able to take in, which is basically a normal process of concluding any transaction abroad. It's the same as when the Department of Treasury wants to raise bond, definitely there will be some agreement that are signed by the mission in order to then indicate that it is a government process. So this request was then sent to the Minister of Finance at the time, which is basically the work that was done in terms of managing that. Then on the 15th of December 2016, the National Treasury granted DECO exemption from the PPP Regulation 16, TA1, TA2, and A and B. and requested DICO to prepare a treasury approval 3, which should include the following. So now, the issue that I'm highlighting, Honorable Chair, is that the department went and seeked for a letter of credit to Treasury, not to go and seek exemption from the requirements of PPP, which now, in granting that approval, then Treasury directed the department to then utilize the provisions as stipulated in Treasury Regulation 16 of TA to say you are exempted from TA1, TA2, but what is now outstanding, it is the application for TA3. That is the communication that we received from Treasury in 2016. So the department, based on this requirement to say a final draft PPP agreement, final draft nominee agreement, because we've been clear from the beginning to say there's no private company that will hold interest of the state. So the state must always hold its interest so that we can then have able to enjoy privileges that comes with that. To say you're able to be exempted from tax for whatever in terms of property tax that need to be done. So that is the part. And in that we must also then develop a financial model, including contingency liability. And one of the concern issue was the impact of the foreign exchange rate movements. To say how do we then manage that in terms of that. And then we then have a draft PPP contract management plan and also documentation indicating the preferred beta capacity and track record. So this is where we were at the time, Chair, to see we are now able to then move. So on the March 2017, the executive authority approved the alternative property located in 21 and 25 East Street and 3rd Avenue. The property consists of a brownstone building to be demolished and the land used for the chancery accommodation. So I want to put this forward, Honorable Chair, to say, in terms of the purpose, when we say we are procuring a land, it's basically based on the fact that for the purpose that we want to use that land is for the construction of a new property. So we're not buying a property for us to use. So that's the classification in terms of seeing land. To say that land will be demolished, which will not accrue, which will never come as an asset to the department. What will come to the department as an asset will be the land in which we then own all the rights. So one of the issues is that in the, as not members can see that it is consist of a few floors in terms of level. But in New York, you then buy what you call a right, because you don't want anybody to come and build something that will not give you any view at all in terms of managing that. So the business there, you buy a right. And what you then have, you've got minimum square feet, which is basically just in terms of the less than 1,000 square meters in terms of the floor plate in where the land is situated. But what is being of value is the air rights in terms of what you can do with the air rights in terms of how far you can build in terms of that arrangement. Then in terms of that part, the minister then signed again the approval for this new site, and DICO then and the preferred bidder negotiated a project preparatory agreement, which is aimed to secure the land for the development, undertake the due diligence on the land, obtain the necessary development approvals, complete the concept design of the facility. So all these as we indicated, that our intention is that we then need to sign the final draft nominee agreement. It means that the preferred bidder was doing all this work on behalf of the state. So there was no change in terms of the specification, in terms of the procurement, because the change came based on the exemption that was received from National Treasury. So in terms of that part. So all this, where the department was advised by the triple P unit in National Treasury in terms of how this should be managed. And the above deliverables were directly related to the TA3 requirements as listed by the National Treasury in the letter of 16 December. So the triple PA was reviewed by our legal team, Oxler. The person who was involved with that was Rian Dihake, just that he's no longer with the department due to ill health. And Oxler legal team was present during the final negotiation of the AAA being finalized. So all this process, people who were supposed to be part of the process were indeed part of the process. And then the PA, which is basically a project preparatory agreement, was then approved and signed off by the accounting office in terms of that process. Under the PA, DECO made a payment of 9 million to the preferred bidder, of which 4 million was used as a deposit to secure the land. I think that just to correct, it's 5 million US dollars instead of 5 million. Basically, this was basically to then meet this requirement that the 9 million was refundable, Honorable Chair, which had conditions in terms of if the department agree with the outcome of the due diligence, the department will confirm, which is basically 3 months. So it was April, May, June. To say in April, the preferred bidder was authorized to sign a letter of intent in terms of purchasing on behalf of the government. In 2 months was to then conduct due diligence in terms of environmental assessment, part one and part B, which all that has been delivered. So based on the conditions of the seller, to say, I can't hold this land in or property in perpetuity, it must be concluded at some point. So we then indicated to say, we have a work to do as a department to deliver on the triple on the TA3 requirements, so that we can then submit our triple PA application. So which means the close was in June in terms of that process. So we then indicated to say, no, we have not secured approval from Treasury. We can't then commit. And one of the reasons that we can't then agree that the deposit will become non-refundable. We then say, no, we'll then go to the ministry in the U.S. to say, we're going to put that as an additional condition, to say we can only agree with non-refundable deposit when we have received approval from the USA ministry in terms of that, in terms of whatever privileges that we'll be able to then enjoy in terms of that. So that only came during September, which the ministry concur and said this is what we're going to be extending. So in 2017, the ministry, the USA ministry, is waiting for us that manage the diplomatic relations from the UN side, not Washington. Because we're dealing with from the UN, not Washington, in terms of that process. So that was the issue. So on the at the end of September, when we're still waiting an outcome for the TA3, which had the effect that the land transaction could not be concluded, and amendment was concluded, moving the closing date to October. I can report, Chairperson, that in October, we managed to receive the invitation to sit with the Shell Treasury to then present the TA3 approval. In October, that TA approval was then requested for us. One, the communication that we received, which was basically not on the letterhead of Treasury, was to say one of the bidders is now suspected to be involved in any corrupt activities. That is the message that we received. But to say from where we are standing, preferred bidders, all parties, they are not blacklisted. So it's very difficult for us to comment. If there's an investigation that is done, I think that it's within Treasury to then finalize that process. Because as far as we are concerned, there's nothing that we have done that will then constitute anything that we suspect there's any wrongdoing. Then they requested that we do and they hit us as a CFO to say, can I then prepare affordability assessment? Can I then prepare value for money as part of the submission of the TA3? We submitted that chair to say this is the issue. We were able to cover the cost with the baseline that we have per month to a maximum of 60% for what we are currently spending in New York. At the moment, we'll then cover the 60%, and then we'll be able to then reprioritize the 40% from our capital budget in terms of that, which they concurred with that. When we're still waiting for good news, Chair, on the 16th of October, we then receive a notice from Treasury that a letter decode to perceive irregularities in the appointment of the preferred bidder. This is happening in 2017, October, after we've received approval to proceed as directed in December 16. We've already committed $9 million, which is already spent, and we are now reaching a level of non-refundable stage in terms of what we've committed. So then they indicated that the evaluation criteria not subdivided to allow BEC member to score objectively, Louboutin investment incorrectly disqualified, failure by Smega to disclose that they are in a joint venture agreement quoting different company registration number, joint venture appointed whereas bidder was Smega Group. So all this, they indicated that these are the procurement issues. But we say, no, be that as it may, what do you do? What do we do? What is it that you must do? So we then receive a letter from the acting director general at the time, Mr. Dondo Mahajan, addressed to the director general, indicating that the Akande Uvesa must make a decision on whether to proceed with the transaction or cancel the transaction. So two options is that is to proceed, it may be considered irregular expenditure. Two, not to proceed, it will be regarded as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So that is where the department finds itself in terms of this transaction. Which basically indicated, which we advise, which I advise the Akande officer to say, if this matters, because it's a project, but you can't have a project running when you don't have a land. Why can't you negotiate with the prefabitors to acquire the land. And that was the recommendation that came from National Treasury to break the impasse in writing to say, can you then buy the land and the other process of development will come later, which Treasury in the process, because in terms of affordability, well, they came back to say, how do you manage this, because the Tier 3 is not yet finalized if there are procurement issues. Can you manage to reprioritize your budget so that you can then able to acquire an asset in terms of that? So we then review our budget, and the negotiation was that the department should then negotiate with the lenders, with the bidders and the sellers, because now you've got two companies. So I was dispatched, Honorable Chair, to go to New York, approved by the accounting officer, to go and indicate that we are interested. We are still having issues, which is the first time I meet the sellers. And they agreed to say, okay, we'll wait for you in terms of that process. And then when we then received the approval to pay by the first week of February, 2018, which was basically another down payment, we were talking about $47 million US dollars, which we already paid $5 million, so the difference is that, and saying we can able to afford to pay that in two installments, that would then have used the money that is available to pay $20 million US dollars in February, and then we'll pay the difference in April. So, Honorable Chair, the Treasury approved that money. On February, the money was sitting in the bank account of TICO. All that was required was to then process that payment. So the accounting officer was not able to approve that to see their procurement issues. So we were not able to proceed because the TA3 is not granted. So we then left the matter there, Chair, to say if not the accounting officer is not comfortable, I think it is within his right to be able to then guide on how we should then proceed. So the matter, and as we speak, Chair, is before the courts. The interesting part is that the preferred bidder approaches the court to request an action in terms of loss of income, which is the process that was initiated by preferred bidder. When we responded, we then responded by a motion to set aside the award and then recover whatever money, $9 million that we have spent. So that is the matter that is before the court in terms of the two issues. So we've got an action and a motion on the side, which with my limited knowledge, we can't able to reconcile the two, because they are two matters for the same thing in terms of the process. So I don't, in terms of the action, the preferred bidder is now put a $598 million claim of lost income in terms plus interest in terms of what we have before us, honorable members. So this is the situation. And the department, through the appointment of the Open Waters, I think they've conducted an investigation, which as a CFO, I've not seen the outcome of that investigation to date. So I don't have any further information on the matter, Honorable Chair. And thank you very much, Honorable Members.
Honorable members.
You have only an hour to engage. Honorable Chetty and Bachman, I have not said you can raise your hands. That was the longest presentation ever since our start as this committee. Must welcome the presentation from the CFO. I was tempted to stop you and chase you away, but I decided to be said something today, because when we sent the invitation to the CFO through the Office of the Minister, we said we want the report on the AG's findings from 2013. 2014 to 2018. But when I decided to bring 2018-2019, I don't know why. And I don't know where Luyanda went. The report raises many issues around people which are not here. The DG and the Chief Director of Supply Chain Management. Those people are not here, and there's serious implications. I don't know whether, Luyanda, you did what we asked you to do from the side of the ministry, that the DG must be here. Is he in your office? Is the DG in your office? Can you call him to come through? Because at some point, there are questions which he must respond to. For instance, your slide 37 and slide 35 on the BRICS and so on. And there's many other slides which I have noted that the DG must respond to. It's so unfortunate that Chief Director of Supply Chain is not here today. Honorable members, on the New York, the CFO decides not to include the findings of the AG deliberately. He writes his own views on the New York. And for me, it's his side of the story. There are no findings of the AG. And in this presentation, he sends the New York issue and put it in one basket to say there was no wrongdoings on the New York matter. And the AG's findings are reflecting the contrary. So I don't think that the committee will commit on slide 53 to slide 67, because it's not AG's report, it's the side of the story of the CFO. But honorable members can engage the side of the story of the CFO, it's okay, but you can't commit. So those are a few reflections which I thought I should indicate to you as I was taking some notes as the CFO was presenting. On the National Treasury Recommendation CFO, which you cited around the issue of New York, are the written recommendations or documentation to support that statement, because we would want to get those records. If you don't have them now, I would appreciate that in 2 working days you submit those records through the office of the minister. Because, you know, once you are here summoned by the portfolio committee, you must know that if you lie, there's dire consequences, because we're doing this in accordance with the Powers and Privileges or Privileges Act of Parliament. So that's why I'm worried that in your report there's issues that you are blaming on the people which are not here, and they won't be able to respond for themselves, and so on. But I will allow the honourable members to engage on the presentation of the CFO. I thought it's important for me to make those few reflections before you engage on the report. Myself, I've noted a number of questions, hoping an hour will be enough for us to engage with the CFO. But what the CFO didn't do is to tell us the role of the CFO in the department. You said it's a new thing. In a new setup, you are bound to meet new things, new processes, because our modus operandi can never be the same, because we are different people with different skills. So there's always a first time in everything. The same way there's a first time in a love affair. There's always a first time in everything that we do as society and as people. So I'm going to note hands. Honorable Bachman, you were the first person. Honorable Ngosi, Honorable Msane, Honorable Chetty. Welcome, Honorable Mshwe. Yeah, we received your apology. Honorable Mulder, are you raising your hand?
Chairperson, I did indicate that I have to leave for another meeting.
Yeah, it was at 10.
I know.
Do you want to speak? Can I start with you,
rather? No, it's fine. I have colleagues will handle that. If you excuse me.
Oh, okay. No, it's okay. You will just sneak in.
Yes, fine.
I mean, sneak out, because at least you're sitting close to the exit. Honorable Mbanza. In that, Mamu Zungu, you will be the last person in that order.
Chair, thank you. I was hoping that the CFO would come to comfort us and allay some of our fears. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that has happened. And the picture that's emerging now, there's two pictures. The one is, you know, you get the soccer coach on the field, and then after the game, when they've lost heavily, he blames the team. He says that their skills, they haven't had any skills, they haven't grown their skills, they haven't improved, they're not practicing. And these are all the responsibilities of the coach to actually implement. These financial blunders that are in the reports fall under two people. They fall under the CFO, and the CFO in turn reports to the DG. Now, with due respect, it just seems that the two positions are finding their way around their portfolio, that they haven't got to grips with their portfolio, and I include the DG in this, and the worry or the concern is that we might be talking to nice people. We might be talking to people that are good-intentioned people. But the law and the MFA and all the different acts that would guide how money is controlled and how money is spent would end up seeing someone in jail. And that's a pity, because, as I said, the intentions might be good, the people might be good, but if you're working in an environment where the head doesn't know what the tail's doing or the tail's telling the head what to do, someone's going to get hurt. That's the warning. Now, I would say that we're still in a situation that the internal committee came to us in our oversight, and they said to us that most of what was in, or definitely most of what has been highlighted here, they pick up concerns. They don't know who to tell these concerns to, because it's almost as if no one's listening. So they raise the concerns, they highlight the concerns, they write the concerns, they even send smoke signals, and yet there's no one there to listen to them, because they can't go out the organization. They can only stay within the organization, and no one's listening. Now, page 11 of the report states that there's capacity constraints with head office and missions. Now, in a question that was a question through Parliament, someone was asking about a specific consulate general in Los Angeles. Now it seems that we're hiring an apartment for this consulate general. I'd like to know the cost of this apartment. I'd like to know what this individual is going to have done for DERCO, or will be doing for DERCO, that we have a capacity constraint, and yet we still have celebrities or VIPs within DERCO that we need to look after, when for the last 6 years we've been complaining that DERCO needs to downsize. Their footprint's too big. They're acting as if they're America and China. They've got footprints all over the world. And quite frankly, we've got all these missions, but we can't service it. We don't know what it is that we even have. So we have to get to a stage where we could actually be, instead of making emotional calls on what we should downsize and downgrade, we should actually look at business decisions. We should actually look at decisions on logic and say, how are we going to bring this footprint into line, or how are we going to stop the wasteful expenditure by knowing what we have and controlling exactly what it is that we have. We speak about skills audits proposed, page 13, 21-2. Why are we proposing it now? Where were we 5 years ago? Where were we 3 years ago? And now we want it done by the 30th of January 2020. This should have been done way before. I'm not convinced on the adjudication bids. Exactly what the CFO has proposed here, I would say that if you had to look at it at a first glance, or if you had to look at it from people that do not have an accounting background, this is an F- for a report card. This is something that says that the tender adjudication, the tender bid committee and the tender adjudication committee should both appear in front of SCOPA. And every single decision that this committee, Chair, every single decision that these two committees have adjudicated over, have performed over, should be brought under the SCOPA spotlight. It befalls me that we can go into a contract with a company Regiment Simeca and Regiment Capital in New York and not know before going into it that the very same celebrities are behind that are already being named in other state capture events, which even begs the question that maybe this decision should also be referred to the Zondo Commission. This specific decision should be referred to the Zondo Commission. With regards to, I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Portman. Welcome, Honorable Mandela.
I'm very much honored to have you here. Can we then get Honorable Chetty?
No, it's me.
Oh, it's you. Okay, Nkosi.
No, Chair, thanks. Thank you very much.
I think with regards to all slides related to New York, I concur with the chair that the version presented to us is actually an exposition of what the CFO thinks, and with all the inputs that we have had since May on this project, it sounds like it's a response. And I, my view, and I would substantiate why I say so, is that that portion we just regard as an input from the CFO rather than as a reflection of what the department has said, because on the basis of information we have ourselves, is that this sequence of events, while materially relevant, are contested by various role players with evidence. You can cite Treasury itself, who instructed you not to proceed until you comply with TA3 requirements. You proceeded, or allegedly proceeded, let's say so. You say here Oxla participated in the process. Oxla had a view. Oxla expressed a view and communicated the view to the relevant committees that were considering this matter. And Oxla made that input to us when we were in DECO, that they alerted you to the fact that there were irregularities in this process. But you just bluntly say, no, it's a flat thing. They participated in the process. They were in a meeting as if they just came and agreed. In other words, they're saying they agreed. It's not true. And on page 62, you say National Treasury responded to you on perceived irregularities. National Treasury did not perceive irregularities. It pointed out irregularities. There's a difference. Because when you say perceived, you are just being interpretive. You are just being, you know, you're interpreting what they say. They didn't say we're perceiving this. They said to you, there are irregularities. There are certain things that you didn't follow in your bid adjudication process, and therefore stop this process. So there's no perception on the side of National Treasury. And Chair, I would submit that it's a misrepresentation of what National Treasury instructed you to do. As the Chair said, the reflections or decision or observations of the AG are not contained in your version. My proposal to you concretely is that we ignore this portion, and that whatever we decide on New York, as we have indicated, that this is something that we have to delve into, that this version be regarded as just an input of the CFO in that process, which is disputed by everybody. It contains material errors or material, not errors, but material, I would say, misrepresentation of the process, but also of the facts available to us, and therefore we cannot engage with the CFO, you know, to and fro, asking this, etc. It's not, we've not reached that point. The other issues then relate, Chair, on the findings, 2014 to 2019, because you have given us 2014 to 2019. There are a number of issues that have been indicated, okay, and I won't categorize them. We have categorized them properly. I want to point out that as far as cash and equivalents is concerned, it's well and good to come up with an interim program that says we have to recognize this, we have to automate it, we have to do 1, 2, 3. But that is interim. What happens thereafter? Where is the role of National Treasury in assisting you deal with and manage your cash and equivalent, cash equivalents? You know, introduce that system for yourselves beyond this the deadlines that are given, in particular to the Director for Finance in the division. And related to that is that I see that it's only the Director for Finance that is given the responsibility here. So I'm assuming that the people under him or her will assist her, but it's just onerous to give one person that responsibility. You have also, in relation to that, indicated training and capacity requirements in the division. But remember that this is not for the first time you are raising issues of training. The issues of training were identified by the AG from 2013-14. We are now in 2018-19. Okay, or 17-18. We've concluded 17-18. There's no demonstration on your side that you have taken these recommendations from AG and acted on them. Instead, you are always telling us, as you do, people that you are giving are data capturers. That's your last statement before this meeting. People that you are giving are people that have been recalled from missions because they've got no home. I mean, they've got no office space or no division to go to. They are then taken to finance. But as a CFO, we have to have the comfort that the team that supports you is as qualified as you are. And if I were you, much more qualified than you. If I was CFO, I would want to be supported by CAs. I would want to be supported by finance expert on exchange controls, because that's your environment. And we need that demonstration. And let me go to SCM. On SCM, and I'll mix SCM and asset management. On SCM and asset management, the management interventions that you're indicating for me are very good. But remember that what you are doing is you are increasing your irregular expenditure register. So it means in the next financial years, your irregular, if you don't act on these things, your irregular expenditure register is going to be onerous on yourselves. And therefore, you require measures to address this. What are you going to do in your action plans to regularize your irregular expenditure, to ask for condemnation? National Treasury must be involved. The reasons must be given for asking for that, for the condemnation. And in particular on travel with fare and contracts and the executive flights, you know, that were procured without following procedure. All we see here, your intervention, is that develop the standard operating procedures for procuring this. Enhance SCM. The SCM chief director must do 1, 2, 3. What we are not seeing is the consequence management on this issue. You know, if you add those irregularities in total, they should go to beyond about 20 million or more. And yet we are not taking action. You are not advising us on what needs to be done to addresses. My last point, Chair, is around the civic responsibilities of the department. Home Affairs has said that it on record, not on record, I mean, has indicated that it is not comfortable with all its responsibilities in as far as civic matters are concerned being collected by yourselves. Visa applications, that they've made that input elsewhere. I just want to understand what is the exact relationship. When you talk about reconciliations, does it include this monies for civic responsibilities on which you act with Home Affairs? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Because let me welcome the DG. Thanks for coming. let me give it to Honorable Nsane.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Okay, my first question will be on the capacity constraint. Has the CFO done an evaluation and of the skills that he currently has in the department and to identify the shortages, seeing that there will be training that will be happening? And then on page 6, 2.2, I just want to know how will the procurement be verified once it's done by missions? And then also a detailed explanation, maybe if I missed it, on the new MSC, how will that work? And with the current capacity of the ICT that we know in the department, how will your plans be integrated into the ICT? And then the CFO mentioned that data centers are working regionally. And we can't have a live expenditure view. So what plans will that system that you'll be implementing, how far will it be assisting the department to integrate it to your head office? And then on page 14, can the CFO give us an example of what he means by functionality that people sign just to get the system moving, just to comply? How does it happen that service providers provide a service without approval? And the CFO mentions in his report that it's a management intervention when he speaks of management of intervention. Who is management that will intervene on the... what happened? Because Delco is an international relations department. What had happened for us not to have a travel agent for us to piggyback on Department of Home Affairs? Was it the best method used to procure computers on lease? And what were the benefits apart from that net trace, if I heard you correctly, to procure your computers on lease? And you stated that the computer contract has expired, but the department is still paying. What is the relationship? Why are we paying for a contract that has already expired? And then I would like to concur with the chairperson, because a lot of the CFO's report is passing the buck to SCM accounting officer, which would be the DG. But when we did an oversight to DERCO offices and we received a presentation from the finance branch, the CFO was heading all these directors that are now all these directors that are now being said to have been the sole people that should have been responsible, like your supply chain management chief director. But on the organogram, the chief director financial management reports to CFO, chief director supply chain management reports to CFO, chief director properties and facilities management reports to CFO. So maybe if the CFO can tell us, since he's finding all these departments that are reporting to his office as the people that did not follow processes and systems, what consequence has been applied to these people that are meant to be reporting to his office? So it's very important that we get first the roles and responsibilities of the CFO so that if we want accountability, we can make him account on things which he is responsible for. And the 186,000 assets that are mentioned on page 49, can you please, can the CFO please separate them from immovable assets and your other assets so that we can determine the quantum of immovable assets and the cost of that. There is a proposal on page 54 for training, but also there is a proposal, there is a highlight which says there is a high vacancy rate. So who are we training when we have a vacancy? Okay, he mentioned the specifications and approval of the diplomatic bag. Whose responsibility is it to specify what type of requirements do we need for this diplomatic bag? I would like to know what happened to the property that you mentioned. It was existence before 94. And then the role played by the BEC and the BAC on the New York. When was it? It was it prior? Was it before? If you can mention that the BAC, this is what they do, and they do it before a tender is awarded. And in this case, what happened? Because and then his report is jumping from US dollars to rand, which as a layman I find it very confusing. So if you can give us a quantum of what has been spent to date on the New York, what do we stand to lose on the New York project, if it can be in rands or dollars but not mixed. And I would like to concur with the previous speaker that we have a different view on your report for the New York, because on our oversight, OXLA and the state law advisors, they told us a totally different story. So I would agree with the previous speaker that it will be a to and fro from the CFO to ourselves with regard to the facts that we also have. And then there's no mention, Chairperson, on consequence management in any of the reports that the CFO has given us today. So it makes us believe that there will be no consequences moving forward, because it's not something that is outlined on your document. So it means it's not even a thought that there should be consequences. And then finally, on the AG's report, it stated that there's misappropriations of donations and sponsorship on one of your missions. That is not mentioned anywhere on your report. Thank you very much.
In that order.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I must say that I'm a bit concerned because you are being a bit too lenient this morning. I thought you would have sent the CFO packing, because we had a directive, and I'm sure the briefing was from 2013 up until 2019. And I'm surprised that you allowed it to continue. Because that having said, Chairperson, the reason I'm asking it is that if you look, and if you go according to what the AG, and the simple illustration by the AG and the presentation they gave us, from 2013-14 right up until to 2018-19, we've just been mediocre in this department. There has been no progression. All we've done is just had unqualified with findings, qualified with findings, qualified audit opinion, qualified. There has been no progress, and I'm surprised we still have the CFO here. The other thing, Chairperson, is that let me just
deal with New York and get it out of the way. Would you request, Chairperson, can I ask that the CFO also, in submission to you what you wanted on the New York, on page 62, he furnishes us with, Durkle responded to these concerns with evidence. What that evidence was. Because it's here that they have responded to National Treasury with evidence. Would like to see that evidence? And again, Chair, like you said, I want to concur with the other members who said that this report totally contradicts what we've been made aware of. For example, one simple clause was around a property with 40,000 square meters and now it's about 20,000 square meters. So definitely just on that alone, there is a query on what the bridge would have been. So when the CFO gives us a report, as to say that there's nothing was wrong, we can very well bring a lot that was wrong. Chairperson, the other concern is page 5, and it talks about the transfers and the funds and Dubai and the three, what's it, Iran, Syria, and
Khartoum.
Damascus, I mean,
Khartoum and
yeah. I recall in our meeting with you, you said to us, because we raised the concern, how is those monies controlled and how the checks and balances. And your answer to us was that there were spot checks and unannounced visits and they were verified. But today we hear about the fact that now you can't reconcile them. And same as in the agency report, you can't reconcile them. Yet when we were listening to your presentation, the question was asked and you said at that time that there were spot checks and unannounced visits was justified that these monies were accounted for. Page 11, and just kept on going around people that were unskilled and people that moved to different departments. And I think Mr. Mashaba spoke to us about the fact that there were people in supply chain management, for example, were data captured that just got pushed through the system, and this is why there was lots of irregularities. It seems now, you know, we have a whole lot of, according to you, unqualified, incompetent, unskilled people that are in the department, and that's why so many things have gone wrong. You speak about bookkeeping, basic stuff like bookkeeping, and you know, I know that the chair might just shut me down if I say it seems like we're not running a 6.5 billion rand budget organization. It's like we're running a spaza shop. But we are an embarrassment to a spaza shop because they themselves run much better than they run in this organization or this department. Chair, most of the stuff we go through with the AG's findings and in the report, again, I must concur with the fact that it's like a blame game. That everybody else's fault except yours. And then the question begs to be asked, what was your role for the oversight as a CFO? And again, I go back to why I asked for 2013-14 up until now. Because I know for the fact that the excuses were to be all of this happened during the time that you were already on leave. But if you go back to the 2013, there's no excuse about you being on leave during that period. But during the period here that you mentioned, the fallback position is going to be you were on leave. And I make mention of that because when you were doing the report, you are specific to say, in your report it said CFO, but you corrected us to say it was the CFO acting. So automatically it was only pushing the buck elsewhere. That's why I said, had you given us the report from the 2013-14 as we asked, we could have pointed blame to you because you were not on leave at that time and there was no acting CFO. As a simple example, the Chief Director 17, Supply Chain Management did not enforce controls to monitor the compliance with laws and regulations. Same thing has been going from the 2013-14, 14-15, 15-16, at the time that you were there. And again, what was that oversight role by you? Non-existing. When I make mention about the one where you said CFO acting, that you corrected, was on page 19. So you were deliberately to tell us it was not just you, the CFO, where the deviation was recommended by the CFO and approved by the Director General, You corrected us to say it was CFO acting, so not you. You have exonerated yourself from that point. And just clarity, on page 23, the acting CFO, Chief Director Property Management, did not send a submission, nor was it indicated on the options available whether the award is approved, not approved, or approved as amended. Minister's engagement with Delco Mail staff on the 11th of November 2011 still went ahead without approval. You've identified this here. What action did you take? Because already if you read what you said here, it was incorrect. Now, you put it in here, again you go back to the acting CFO. So the buck is gone somewhere else. The terms of reference sent by the department to the dealership did not have an evaluation and education criteria to be used for the procurement of an official vehicle for the deputy minister. You brought in there to say the fact that they used the ministerial handbook and national service that was incorrect and the age said so. Again, the question is, why? You alluded to the fact that also from the ministry. So there's two places where you make mention to that was not just the officials but also the ministry. I'd like for you to also inform us who in the ministry. Because this was about the vehicle and it was about the other tender. The issue around piggybacking on travel with Flair, and I understand that Durka did not know any travel arrangements, and it involved the fact that the minister needed travel arrangements. And this is why you piggybacked on DHF. If that was for the minister and for a travel affair, why is it then the very same travel with Flair was used for venue and catering? It was just about the fact that it was a stopgap measurement that the minister needed a flight, like you said. If it's externally going overseas, it's coming across that way. This was an internal one, and the issue is you don't have an arrangement, so you're piggybacked on DHS. But then again, it was in this specifically discussed about the use of travel with Flair for that. Now you've used them for other issues. Page 35, again, just for my benefit. The Chief Financial Officer did not take adequate steps to ensure that all procurement laws and regulations were complied with. Is that you or is that the acting CFO? Again, for my clarity, because you've been telling me before that it was acting, but this I'm not sure whether it maintains directly to you. You made mention about the registers and the two parts where it is the head of missions and the head office, and that's where you get discrepancies, and that most of the time what we should rightly do is take the one from the head office, because that should be the one that's most correct. Again, my question comes, surely the head of the missions, and if you're looking at the assets at that point in time, where they see them physically compared to what you see in the head office, and if you listen to what the AJ said to us, and there was no correlation between what assets were at mission and what was reported at the court officers. And that's where the contradictions were happening. Part of the explanation was that because there were data captures involved, there was no proper handover from one to the other. And that's why there was discrepancies. I'm covered on the issue around the computers. And just the last one, Chairperson. The diplomatic bag. You know, it's the first time I see someone does not want to, pardon me for the French, but screw over government. We were told, Chairperson, that when we raised this at their offices, that it was coming at a cost to us, the extension. And that's common sense. The mere fact that it expires, you now want to extend it because you took it for another bidder. Now, if I look at page 56, and you said that the yearly contract was 9,921,000, that comes to the equivalent of 826 million. We then know the contract was varied for a further 763,204.25 a month at 7%. Treasurer's approach for a further variation for 3 months, September to November, that ticketed 2.292105. for 23%. Now, what I would expect is that you're saying to me, when you extended it for the first month, and this is what happens normally in tenders, once you come to the expiry, and if you want to renegotiate, automatically there is a variance that's added at the top up, a percentage. So I'm assuming that the 7% was over and above the current rate for that 1 month. And 23%? I worked out the figures, yeah. It was 826754.16, and that's over the 12 months, and then you get 763204 over the 1 month. And then you get the 3 month period for 764035. Now I'm trying to figure out where is the 7% and where is the 23%. If you can just enlighten me on that. Because I know if I do a tender and if I charge you R100 for the normal 12 month period, and if you want to extend it by another one, I'll charge you R150 because I know now you're in a catch 22. Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening here. It seems like it's on a decreasing value, yet by your own admission, there's only two people can do this. Steinet and DHL. And both of them do not want to go in with any other. I think the words you use, if you take it for 30 million over the 3 year period, they must come in with a SMME. And they don't want to do that because the two of them control it. So the two of them control it. And if this is with DHL, why would they want to charge us a lesser rate when they got the monopoly? Or unless the calculation is wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to be long because I think the colleagues have covered quite a lot. Let us thank the brief, but Chair, we have asked the CFO to bring a rabbit here. Instead, we get a crocodile. Now we're busy chasing a crocodile, and it's worse for us who don't unable even to swim. So I don't even know how to engage. We're just doing what we did not ask to be done. If you look at the agenda, Chair, the item is very clear. It says briefing by the CFO on the circumstances that have led to the recurring of the Auditor General's audit outcomes on the department which relate to the work of the finance and asset management branch. Most of these things that are presented here are not actually responding to the question. It's just a chair, an explanation of how things were done and why they were done. But it's not telling us what are the circumstances that led to these wrong things that were done. So if this was an exam question, I think, I don't know how the markers were going to mark this, because then it will be a wrong answer to another question which is not asked. So Chair, without wasting your time, I think I don't want to go to a process of engaging too much to this one, because our colleagues have done so. I just want to propose that and support the sentiment that say, let's ignore the New York report, because can't even engage on that one. It's full of misrepresentations and lots of contradictions. And it's involving lots of role players. It's the National Treasurer, it's this one, even the Minister, the Executive, is implicated in this report. They approve, the DG approved. So I would suggest that let's not even go there, Chair. And then, Chair, to support my frustration, and also for the record purpose, I think I would suggest, Chair, that if you do have a letter that was sent to the Ministry, you read it for record purposes. So that it will be recorded that we requested something as a committee, and once again we get something that we have not requested. And now we have to engage for this whole hours now. And I don't know, Chair, what you do suggest as a way forward in this thing, because really I'm disappointed. You see here, Sishai Mumish, Chair. We are chasing shadows, and we are not playing the game. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Hlalo ene ukubeke ngokwami ngabe enengithe le meeting ayibisiphele nje badushe qalile. Really ene CFO wa play with us. Mangabe usitshela enithi ene you have ene uqasha abantu ene kwi database, mangibone ngathi nawe uthathe i database. Ngoba really umsebenzi wakho wena as a CFO awuwenzi. And Shepherdson, I want to say, any, committee likhulu le. It's a pity, uma any Shepherdson no minister nathi silapha ku National Assembly, you are not there. Uzoma ku podium akhulu into engekho. Mina we hope ngicabanga ukuthi namhlanje uzosinikeza nje into nje ene ekahle. Two, any Shepherdson, u CFO la, usitshela ukuthi usimsebenzi manje akawazi umsebenzi wakhe. As a CFO, funa understand ukuthi ene i-supply chain ene kwenzakalani. Ba report, I think khona singa reporter khona. Even internal audit, kusho ukuthi nayo lapha inayo reporter kuyo, nayo reporter kuyo, u-DJ reporter kuyo. Usitshela wena futhi uqashwe ena abantu abangenama-diploma, in your department, abangenama-degree. Kusho wena, sinike i-reportation njalo. It means ene kuyadlalwa ke laphaya. It's a piece ngoba ene uvuka eminyango ubheka bese kuthiwa ene eParliament akusebenzeki. Bese bengathi ene ama-members eParliament kanti ama-officials angawenzi umsebenzi. Uyasitshela futhi wena la ukuthi ene uzokwenza ene new post engekho ku-organagram. Uzosiqashela u-director ene we-costing management. Kusho
wena. Very good point.
Ngifuna ukuthi sihlalo emntangadliwe ngoba kuningi asebekushile ngabanye ene kodwa-ke ene to me ene kuthi ene iminista mhlawumbe nani phinde lihlale mhlawumbe ene no CFO nawe ene director anisebenzi ngampela ngifuna ngiqaba mangidlala ngathi. Nisitshela nini ukuthi ene leli komiti liphethe ama-countries amaningi but ene nidlulwa any local government where la siphuma khona. Isiphithi othi general mhlawumbe lina ene akaninikezi ene i-consequence management ukuthi nizwa ukuthi nokuthi 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 cha nidlala ngathi nje. Mina u-CFO bengisebenza naye akasebenzi njenganawe i-CFO. Wena udlala le-department enkulu nje. Ungathi nje ena angazi ukuthi ngathi ene ilaphi. Is a manager laba bayebisa ukuthi endingathi is phaza shop usiphitha and this is a huge and budget esikhuluma ngayo. Ngizwe kuna lapho nje ngoba bese ngizokwafika la ene nginde ekho khona right khona into enje correct.
Hello members. It's now 1:15. I don't know where do I start. Welcome, DG. We thought it's important that you come and join us in the meeting. It's a pity that the chief director of a supply chain is not here. Hoping you have noted the questions that I directed to you by the honorable members. First of all, I think I must read the letter as suggested by the honorable members and then take it from there. The letter was written on the 23rd of October to the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Dear Honorable Minister, briefing to the committee. The Portfolio Committee on International Relations and Cooperation is scheduled to hold a meeting on the 30th of October 2019 at 9:30. Excuse me. The Portfolio Committee requests a presentation by the CFO on the circumstances that led to the recurring audit general's audit outcomes on the department, which relate to the work of the Finance and Assets Management branch. The presentation should address the following audit outcomes: cash and cash equivalents, submissions of financial statements with material errors, non-compliance with legislation in supply chain management, prevention of unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, contracts awarded for diplomatic bag services, procurement of goods and services without inviting competitive bids, contracts awarded to bidders based on evaluation adjudication criteria that differed from those stipulated in the original invitation for quotations, supply chain and financial management issues with regard to New York pilot project, lack of completeness and existence of movable assets register. The venue of the meeting will be communicated before the end of this week, which is that week, and the Honorable Chair signed the letter, and the letter was sent to the Minister. That's why we have this meeting today. So that's the letter. So there you have it. DG, there's few slides. You're 16, you're 19, 20, 21, and so on, and so on. Everything that is there, it's supposed to be you're responsible or whatever. But then, the PFMA, I think the CFO reflected on this in passing, that the PFMA, it gives a power to the DG as an accounting officer of the department to delegate responsibilities or assign powers and duties to the CFO in this case. Now, when chips are down, the projection on the presentation begins to suggest that the CFO can't take responsibility of things that had happened and went wrong in the department. And once you are appointed to an organization to lead, by accepting the appointment, you are equally committing to the baggage that you will find in that particular organization or department and what have you. Now, you can't be seen wanting to distance yourself. And I'm worried that in the presentation, in some sections of the presentation, you in actual fact acknowledges that the AG had findings, and in some you don't acknowledge the findings of the AG, and you even sum it up to say there was no wrongdoing when the AG has found it a lot and lot of wrongdoings.
So that, for me, it's a contradiction of a worst kind, to say the least. I did not want to send you packing, because I know you always view this committee as the harshest, especially to you. Deliberately, I did not send you packing. Otherwise, the authority to send you packing and the reasons for that, they are there at my disposal. But I chose not to do that. Now, in your presentation, you highlight that 2016, the executive approved that you procure a property, and funding was secured to procure the land at some point. And then you decide to, for me, that alone it's a contradiction. Because with that money of property, you decide to go and procure the land. Or with that you change everything, you decide to put land instead of property, and you go and procure a property. There's a contravention of the laws there. Because if you are instructed to procure a land, and then you decide to procure a property, definitely there's something wrong. I heard your explanation, but I'm not convinced with that explanation that you have given. Somewhere, somehow, there's a contravention of the law, whichever way, but we are going to get to that. Now, in the processes of the New York, in your statement there, you are saying that there was legal advice, there was this, there was that. But the chief state law advisor made it very clear when we were there that they were never involved in the procurement of whether it's a land or it's a property. From the initial stages, they were not there. Now, you also highlight and refer to that there's OSCLA or OSLA or whatever, lawyers or a law firm, that is in fact working with you as a department on this particular issue of New York by pilot project. But the Open Waters lawyers, they've raised a concern that they need your affidavit on this matter, and you were not cooperating. Have you submitted that affidavit to Open Waters lawyers on the New York matter itself, so that we are able to have information as well from you? On the New York, Triple P Act of 2017-2018, there are findings there that the department did not comply with applicable supply chain management prescriptions by the AG. Contracts were awarded to bidders based on evaluation adjudication criteria that differed from those stipulated in the original invitation for the bidders. All these things, they are there in the AG's report. The company which was awarded the tender was found not to have participated in the bidding process. That's the AG's report. This led to the incurring irregular expenditure to the amount of 118 million. That's the AG's report. But still, you're summing it up to say there was no wrongdoing. Now, the question again today arises whether you are disagreeing with the AG's report or not. Are you willing to embrace the AG's report or not? That question, it will always come out, because now the what you are presenting to us, it is contrary to what the AG has presented to the Portfolio Committee as a Chapter 9 institution of this country. So that alone, it's a bit problematic, to say the least. So there's a lot that is is so wrong. Honorable members have raised this issue and all these other issues. And your report for me is just a blame game, dragging the names of ministers that were there before, this and that. But it did not reflect on the recurring problems which started in 2013 as per the AG. Because we asked the AG as to when does this thing start, your fruitless expenditure, incurring, and so, all these things. They said 2013. It's here on my notes. I have noted all these things here when we asked the questions from the AG. Now, on CIMERCA arrangements and the investments and so on, the AG has a particular finding and a particular report. You have something different. So, you know, Tina, we are lawmakers. And it is this institution that appoints Chapter 9 institutions. And it is this very same institution that established all these Chapter 9 institutions. Now our trust is on them. It's in their hands. We know that they have no reason to implicate any department on any issue when they're doing their own findings. So there's a lot that I've noted, but I think I'll be wasting time if I raise these issues. DG, the CFO will respond on the honourable members' issues raised, and then we want you to respond on slide 37. I don't know whether you have the document. TWF. Go. BRICS Summit, you are going to respond on the BRICS Summit. And on slide 19, you must respond. On slide 19, on slide 16, go. You must respond on slide 16 as well. And also, you yourself, DG. You must tell this portfolio committee as to who is in fact responsible to implement the findings of the AG on consequence management. You must respond on that so that we are able to be clear ourselves, because seemingly there's blur lines on that. You yourself, you don't know probably. So if you don't know, you don't respond, because we are going to come for you. Now, on slide 58 of your presentation, CFO, you are mentioning three people there, that three committees that were responsible for all the processes. Chair, the BEAT Evaluation Committee, I'm sitting here asking, who is the chair of the BEAT Evaluation Committee? BEAT Adjudication Committee, I'm sitting here wanting to know who is the chairperson of the BEAT Adjudication Committee, and then the accounting officer, in this case of slide 58, who is the accounting officer that you are referring to? Because, so that we don't have a case of a taxi driver, a CFO, a chairperson of a board in one institution, which happens to be a state-owned entity as well, so that we are clear, because these things, they find themselves on the media domain. We don't know who is here, for instance. We know this one's from the department, the rest we don't know. Probably there's some kind of media personnel here in the room, because they don't get to introduce themselves. So we need to know and understand this. On the issue of the legalities on New York, I'm raising this because in your thing, you talk about risk review. It was done. Legal review was done prior to the approval by the accounting officer. But the chief state law advisor said, I don't know. I was never part of this. But then if those reviewers were done, who was in charge of that? of all these legal processes that you have deflated in the presentation, so that we move from the same viewpoint on these matters. So you must start there for DG, your issues are few. I think as CFO there are many, hoping that by 21st will be done.
Thank you, Chair, and I want to start by saying I'm an accountable person, and I respect authority, and I take this August House very serious in my interaction. It's a privilege for me to come and share this moment. So I'll start, Chair, the issue of New York requested to provide supporting documents for the things that I've mentioned in the presentation, which, Chair, I'm committing here that I'll provide the necessary document within the 2 days that has been specified by the chairperson. So what I have, I'll share in that process. So there is no question in terms of what I made is not supported. So I'll provide the documentary proof in all the process that has been followed. Honorable Chair, the question that that I refuse to submit an affidavit to Open Waters, Chair, I'm hearing for the first time. I've not received that request. The request that I engage with Open Waters, I can't remember the date, but I was that is the date of my that was in April on Friday.
Yeah, thanks, Jane. Chair, you gave us a limited 1 o'clock to be done with. It's now 1:10. Some of us are getting ourselves ready for the next plenary. And I'm not sure how long this is going to take, Chair, but with all due respect, I want to propose that, with your indulgence, that we close this meeting. The responses can be sent to us via written responses or at the next meeting, because some of us also have got other work to do right now. It's an important debate. I mean, it's an important session after this. Some people are down in lockdown. If you don't mind, some of us have also other commitments. Thank you, Chair.
Does the proposal from Honorable Chetty? But why did you raise questions if you don't have time?
Chair, you're forcing me to give you a response. Chair, when I was raising those questions, when we were doing our question time, I was still before the 1 o'clock deadline. So my apologies for that, but I was within my time frame. Unfortunately, there were more questions than input, or there was more questions than what we expected from the presentation. If the presentation was more conclusive, we wouldn't have had so many questions. So don't blame me.
So questions you raised because there was this whatever that Honorable Mpanza referred to as whatever. I don't know those animals. I'm not an animal myself. There's lions that are in the media domain now, so I don't want to enter into the specs of what tigers and lions and everything. So I don't want to enter into that space of animals because Parliament is not a zoo. So it can't be that my meeting will be turned into some kind of an animal kingdom as well. So I think we must engage on this matter so that we conclude and then take a decision.
Just to seek clarity from the proposer, Chairperson, because the questions were scattered. Some are seeking clarity, some are seeking responses, and all of them seek responses. So how do you propose that the CFO responds in writing to all our questions because I will support your move that it comes in writing, but it must be questions that are properly
You have interpreters here. Honorable Nsane is raising a question.
You see, you're not asking me to become like a coach here, but it's okay. Chair, I just, most of the questions and response or the points of clarity, I'm sure our secretaries must have recorded them. They can just forward it to the CFO as well as to the DG. And you've already set a deadline within 2 days to get those responses.
We want to say something. Honorable Ngozi, then Honorable Mbanza. Honorable Mbanza, then Honorable Ngozi.
No, Chair. To do justice, Honorable Chair proposed two options. There was the issue of a written response or engaging, adjourning this and engaging on it in the next meeting. But which I think that cannot happen, particularly because we've got a lot of issues. So I'm just responding to that second option. So, Chair, I think we should just stick with the one of written responses to the committee if time is not allowing us. But I think, Chair, I was going to request that we give the CFO and the DG just for them not to respond necessarily to the final details of the question, but to take us out of this quagmire and propose for us and what do they think we should do themselves, particularly the DG because Chair, really we'll run around. The letter was read to the committee and the letter was not responded to. So for me, Chair, my proposal would be to get a way forward from them and then we can consider it as a committee whether it's appropriate or not. Thanks.
Why are you on your toes?
I'm just stretching.
my
suggestion, Chair, is that in addition to the responses to the question, the CFO responds to the letter properly. And that it via the DG, so it shouldn't just be a presentation that he brings on his own, that it via the DG, so that we have a presentation that comes from the department and not from an individual in the department.
Are you insinuating that the DG did not see the presentation?
From my experience, yes.
Is that the sentiments of the committee? DG, why are you raising your hand?
I'm afraid that I will come with
something.
You want to be a spokesperson of who? We want to respond to what we have asked you to come to do. 5 minutes. 5 minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Members. I just want to be short to say, in Recommendation 8 of the committee, we are expected to investigate and report on the circumstances pertaining to irregular expenditure to the amount of 298 million incurred during the year in question, and that the report should come with timeliness on how the department will work towards recovery as per the framework. And I see in the presentation, of course, a lot of specifics for what happened last year are there, and what will need to be done is for us to be able to explain how everything went, some of which may have been said during the CFO's presentation. In that case, most of the questions relating to this area, we could request that it be brought forward very quickly for us to give this version, because it will best explain all the things that relate to irregular expenditure in the way it happens. Because what I see here is an extract from the management report without comments that were made, as well as the conclusion that the AG did, but the figures and circumstances are the same. But this question is going to obtain a picture. It will include both the current as well as the previous years. So I was thinking that perhaps, because this is 3 months, it's 3 months, maybe it is brought forward specific on this one to give us an opportunity as a department to fully account to the committee on this. And that is where the committee will get the picture.
We are here, CFO's presentation. We called you here to respond on TWF, on the gala dinner of the political party that you approved for the minister, on BRICS and so on. But what I want to suggest to the committee, instead of having the CFO responding in writing, let's have another session. Let's adjourn this session. And then have another session, not next week. Next week we are dealing with very important matters. One item, and it's a very important item that we are dealing with next Saturday. And then I have the DG. You are going to read that report. Have you seen the report?
Yes.
Did you see the report?
Yeah.
I'm talking about, we are on the CFO presentation. That presentation, did you get the presentation?
Yeah, I got it
yesterday. You got it yesterday, like us? Okay, that's good. Okay. And then you got the presentation. So the copy, CFO, you give the copy to Chief Director with Supply Chain, ne? Because at least you have presented the report now, so that he peruses the report as well, so that when you come the three of you, and then we respond to all these things as the DG of the department, the CFO, and Supply Chain. Because in some instances, you are pointing out that this chief director of supply chain was in contravention with the PFMA on your presentation. So I think it would be fair to say the CFO, the DG, and the chief director must come and respond to these things, where honorable members will not be rushing. But I think this rush of honorable members is also informed by the attitude towards the presentation itself. Probably when we come back and reconvene, you would have cooled down and so on. And in that, because some of the things CFO is saying, he was not there. There's issues of acting CFO approved this and acting CFO approved that. So that we close this chapter on financial accountability of the department. So that whoever responsible to execute consequence management, he knows what to do and how to do it and when to do it and who must be held accountable. So I think we need to close the meeting on that note, in that spirit, that what date is it next week? This week we're dealing with one of the most important achievements of this committee. You must, you know what? you must upload for yourselves. That bill is coming here. 13th. The bill is coming next week. We are going to deal with the bill. That's the only item in our portfolio committee. Don't be excited, DJ. Yeah, so don't be excited. Because the bill might deal with you as well. But the bill is coming next week. That's the great achievement for us as the portfolio committee. And then these whole things, okay, these other side issues, Honorable Nkosi, can come. We can entertain them with powers vested in us. We can do anything with that bill. Yeah. So that we deal with the bill, we table it in Parliament, and then it goes to the President, and then we are done with the issue of the bill, and it sits there.
Yeah.
The Minister and the DG will advocate for the processes of signing off the bill. You know, you must beg the President, because it's his hand that will liberate you. So you must beg him. Use that hand. No, not the committee. No. Once it's out of our hands, it's with you and the minister, not the committee. We are not. Tina, we are going to conclude our processes. We told you that when we celebrate Christmas and New Year, we don't want to have this baggage of previous portfolio committees. There's new sheriffs in town. We do things systematic, DJ. So next week, we are not going to meet with you. We are going to meet with you that week. So we are going to write the letter again to the minister to say we request the CFO, Chief Director of Supply Chain, acting CFO, and the CFO currently. So those people, No. No, those people are sevanga ndongabo. Yeah, we do not hear anything about them. Sifuna aba sevengabo. And then on another occasion, we will get the minister, the one that is referred to on the report, at some point, to come and account. I get we've got powers here in its parliament. This that minister, which is mentioned here on the report, will come in account. I don't know which DG was that, whether it's this one or the other one. We will only find out when we interact with the things that are highlighted here that week. So we are not going to accept any apologies. We are not going to accept any apologies from the department. Not unless you die. Then we'll accept that apology. Because that meeting is an important meeting for us. As a committee, for the department, for the current minister, this interaction is very important. Are we clear, gentlemen? Are you noting, people of the ministry? Okay. So that you report to your principals that they are principals. We are their principals, as we are seated here. Are saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We are principals of all of you. We've got power ourselves, given by the electorate. That's the nice thing about being a member of parliament. So on that note, our meeting is adjourned until Klaviki. Is there announcements?
Yes, only for the members.
Oh.